Hey, folks, I'm Craig Lipinski.
I'm former Hollywood actor Seth Gastelum.
And I have no idea where I am right now.
And this is episode 125 of the TV List video game podcast, available at TVList.net. You can check us out on iTunes. There's an RSS feed, and it's been a couple months. So I just want to make sure everyone is aware of all this stuff, that we exist. We actually recorded an episode 125 on July 22nd. It was a mess. It was unusable. We actually had to record it in three pieces, and all those pieces sounded like garbage.
We have a lost episode now.
Yeah, we do have a lost episode. Yep, that was a garbage episode, and I apologize to you guys for participating and then not having to like anything to show for that. I don't apologize to our listeners because fuck y'all, you don't do anything.
Man, I feel sad about that. It was the best episode ever, by the way. Everybody who's listening, you are missing out on so much.
There was a lot of content to that episode.
It was literally the best thing you would have ever heard. And now you don't get to.
No. Well. Oh, well. No one does. I trashed it because it was all garbage. We haven't actually had an episode up in, like, 2 months. And I think part of that is just, like, it was summer and, like, I really didn't want to record.
Okay.
This is a really weird time. Like, you do, like, Sunday at 4 and you're like, oh, I could be out, like, drinking or playing video games or hanging out with my girlfriend. We could be doing it. But, no, I'm talking about video games. And I love you guys, and I like making things for people to take in, but it was just kind of like smack dab right there, like, you know, in the afternoon. And that kind of sucked. And Seth has been a good sport about doing it during the week. There have been a couple times where we've had to, like, record an episode during the week, but he doesn't have a preference for that. And I don't blame him, because it's just really strange. We live in three different time zones, so it's a little bit tough.
But when we record during the week, I literally, like, get in the door from work and then, like, have to sit down and start recording.
That's what I
think. It's not great. It's not great.
Chris gets dragged to Pottery Barn every other week. And he's the only person I know that goes to, like, Disney World, like 18 times a year. So, you know, just the logistics of just getting to record have just gotten a little more difficult lately. But really, for me, like, I have literally done 125 episodes of, like, pre- and post-production. And I fucking hate it. I hate doing that. It's not hard. There's just so much minutia. Like, after this is done recording, there's so much, like, stupid, piddly little shit I have to do between the time we're done recording and the show goes up, so that people can listen to it. And then like, every 10 episodes or so, something breaks, and then I have to figure out what broke. And I just got tired of doing it. There's no like reward to that. It's very mechanical, routine, boring work. It's work. It's a chore. And so, like, I always get, like, annoyed. I mean, I know I've expressed it. I always get annoyed when people, like, ask me, like, where's the podcast? And I know, like, that comes from, like, a place where, like, they enjoy the podcast. They want to know where it is. Like, it's totally harmless. But what I hear is, hey, Craig, have you done all that pointless, stupid, boring shit yet? And the answer is no, I haven't done the stupid, pointless, boring shit yet.
Craig, isn't bringing smiles to the faces of people reward enough?
Apparently not. He thinks that's stupid, boring, pointless shit.
I think that's awful. I am so sorry.
Craig hates everybody.
Face.
This is why he hates Looney Tunes.
This is exactly that, right?
I think so.
I hate happy things.
Smiling and laughter. Fuck that.
I am totally,
that won't do. No.
I'm a cartoon supervillain. Like, I don't really have any purpose other than to cause misery. There's no end game for me.
Is this why you're growing out your facial hair so you can twirl your mustache
I'm
in an evil way?
I'm getting an eye patch, too. I'm gonna do this up. I mean, I would like to get a little more on a consistent basis. Like, I would love to say that we're going to do it every week going forward, but that just may not be the case. But, I mean, hopefully we don't have another two-month hiatus. I don't know.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, trying to be more consistent is not really hard. We could do it, like, you know, once every month and a half, and we'd be more consistent.
Well, that is true.
Then at least than this.
The problem is, I mean, I want to promise that there's not going to be, like, a two-month gap, but at the same time, like, I can't promise the rate at which shows will come out. I want to do weekly, but, like, weekly, like, that because it really becomes a grind when you're just, like, the recording's fun. Like, you're talking to you guys, it's weird. Seth go. Oh, there he is. Skype is weird. Being weird today, I don't want to, like, ugh.
I was hiding behind some pillows. You didn't.
Just put them on hold again.
I am dimming my screen completely so I can't even see the application. But no, I mean, it becomes a grind just doing all that stuff, like, after recording, after a while. It just gets to you. Gets to me, anyway.
Yeah, I don't have to do any of that shit. I just show up and go, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so, no, it just wore me out, and I couldn't...
Craig, we appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do. Thank you. Thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you. I don't know what to talk about right now. I've been up to, like, not a whole lot, because I am fun employed. I have been...
Well, sounds like you should be up to a lot then, Craig.
I actually... You know what? The thing is, like, loafing hasn't kicked in. I'm probably still more proactive than most employed people. I've gotten a little more lazy. Like, I'll sit there and I go, oh, should I do a bunch of shit, or should I sit here and watch Parks and Rec on Netflix? Oh, Parks and Rec wins!
I have no job. Should I record a podcast, or should I just do some stupid shit?
You know, whether I have a job or not doesn't change how fucking annoying post-production is. It's still annoying.
Well, apparently it makes it more annoying, because you were doing it when you had a job.
That's true. The break's been nice. I mean, really, like, not have. I mean, I've had a job since I was, like, 13. Like, I was a paperboy for, like, 3 years, and then the day I, like, turned 16, my mom's like, motherfucker, you're getting a real job so I can take your money. So, I worked at McDonald's for a number of years, and then this last job, I mean, I never said where I worked. I don't work there anymore, so it doesn't really matter. I worked at Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, and I did that for over 8 years.
Craig was fired for stealing experimental drugs. That's actually how he's growing his beard now. He couldn't grow a beard before.
Yeah. They're trying to target, like, hair loss and trying to get it on the head, but, like,
it's just growing.
It's just growing. Face.
Everywhere. It's not just his face, it's just everywhere.
You don't want to see the bottoms of my feet.
Can I get some of these drugs, please?
Yeah. What, you going bald?
No, my face is very bad.
Face, yeah. I got a rad beard. My beard rules. But the break's been nice. Break's, you know, I've worked a lot. I mean, for a while there, I mean, I was working at Pfizer. I was working part-time at the Toy Vault, and then I was doing all this site and YouTube stuff. Like, I don't know. Not doing anything is pretty cool, but I'm going to run out of money at some point. And that's not going to be cool.
Get into dogfighting or something.
Dude, like, looking... Like, I thought the difficulty in getting a job... like, in this job market, which just shows my ignorance, right, was, like, just getting the job. I thought there was just, like, a lot of competition for jobs, right? So you get an interview, and, like, oh, they don't get hired because this other guy has, like, 8 degrees. And, you know, it's actually getting the job. There's a huge hole where middle-class jobs used to be. They just don't exist. It's crazy. There's a huge gap. Like, if I want to stock shelves for $7 an hour, I can do that. Or if I want to be, like, a neurosurgeon, if I want to do something that requires, like, 3 doctorates, that's available. All that cool stuff, like, I'm a middle manager, like, that's what I've done, and that's what I'm good at. There is nothing, there's a big hole there. Like, I applied at a bookstore, and the bookstore hasn't called me back, so that's where we're at.
Time to move to Japan.
I'm actually going to Japan, but I'm like, whatever, fuck this, I'm out. Like, who cares, man?
Just stay. They won't know you're not Japanese.
Yeah, I can blend right in with this white beard. Nobody will know. I would love this day. That would be awesome. But not happening. So, really, like, I really haven't been up to much. So, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading, playing games, and, you know, the usual stuff, just minus the job, I guess. But it's really strange just being up during the day. Being up during the day is still a novelty to me. And when I worked during the night, I mean, my average sleep was probably, like, 4 to 5 hours. And so I was never, ever, like, fully awake there. I never felt energized. But the weird thing is I never really felt truly tired. Like, I never knew. I just went to bed as a function, like, now powering down. It was, like, a purely functional thing I had to do or I would die. And now it's weird because I'm up during the day and I get up and I'm like, fuck you. Like, I tell you, I got up at 7. I jumped out of bed. I don't even linger. I'm like, yeah, let's do shit. And then by, like, 8:30, I'm like, whoa, why is my body not moving anymore? What is this? Like, I'm now experiencing what it's like to be tired again, and I haven't felt that way in, like, years. I worked at night for a very long time. So now it's just like, whoa, I can't move. I need to sit down. So, yeah, no, it's been an interesting experience. But that's me. How about you, Chris? What have you been up to?
I've been up to a lot. We actually had some people come visit last month, friends from out of state. friends from in-state, but a few hours away. I got a freelancing job, so I'm filling my evenings with designing more stupid, you know, napkin shit. The company that laid me off 6 months ago or whatever hired me to freelance now, so that's cool, I guess.
That's more work, but more money. That's pretty cool.
More money is good. It sucks having a little less time in the evenings, but Jackie's taking classes in the evenings, so, you know, it's a good, gives me some things to do then, so that's nice. But I haven't actually been playing a ton of games, which, you know, it sucks that we've been off for 2 months and I still haven't even played all that much to talk about, but we'll get to that a little later.
Mm-mm. All right.
What about you, Seth?
What about me? I've been sitting at this exact spot for 2 months just waiting for this podcast to resume.
I'm absolutely not surprised.
I have literally nothing in my life.
If this he is said it. That, like, I would believe it.
We tried once, Seth and I did.
We did.
We were here.
We had a chat podcast.
Yes.
I kept
really?
A record of
that. That was interesting. We were going to post that on the site, but I don't think we ever did. And that was probably not a good idea to do that.
I said some things that may have been interpreted as offensive, but it was just from, like, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
So what you're saying is that I am the barrier between Seth's bullshit.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
No, but I don't know, went to a water park, saw, like, Weezer in concert, went down to Mexico and went to, like, a grand opening of a convention center / food party, and the Secretary of Fish gave a speech. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe, man. I've seen attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I've done a lot.
Seth is really weird because he really doesn't talk about his life. He doesn't even tweet about it. And even on the podcast, it's very vague. Like, I sort of feel like Seth exists, like, in a tube and, like, cryosleep until he needs to be brought out to, like, tweet, like, a $300 box copy of a Super Nintendo game he bought or to be on this podcast. Like, that's it. That's all he does. And then he just goes back to sleep in his cryo tube.
See, I call it a bed. But,
and it's not a tube, but it's filled with goldfish crumbs.
No. Goldfish are gross. I don't like them. We're talking about, like, the cheese snack, not actual goldfish, right?
Yes.
All right.
We're talking about the delicious crackers right now, right? Not real goldfish.
No, but I don't know. I think I did a lot of stuff there.
No, that is a lot of stuff. That's crazy.
That's fine. Oh, man, I watched, like, Batman Beyond all night last night, too. I need to finish off the rest of it because I've been watching on Netflix. I actually didn't like the show that much when I was, I don't know, how old was I? Probably like a young teenager. I didn't like the show that much because I felt like, I don't know, a lot of their, like, youth culture was forced or whatever. Now that I'm older, I realize that they're just, like, straight up mocking youth culture. They weren't trying to go for, like, any sort of, like, reality to it. They're just straight up making fun of people. But no, I love the show now. And then I finished off the series on Netflix, which ends, like, super shittily. It ends on, like, some episode that sets off some spinoff cartoon that I've never even heard of. I had to, like, look up on Wikipedia to figure this out. I was like, what the hell is this bullshit?
What?
Yeah, there's, like, a robot in one episode called Zeta. And he, like, he's
Zeta
a
project.
Yep. He's, like, a war robot, but he doesn't want to fight anymore. So, like, Batman helps him escape Gotham or... I don't even like calling Terry McGinnis Batman because fucking Batman's Bruce Wayne. But so Terry helps him escape Gotham and blah, blah, blah. But and then he comes back, like, on the last episode. He looks completely different. He's hanging out with, like, some young girl teenager thing or something. And, like, the whole episode's just stupid. And it's just to set up this spinoff that I don't know. I don't even care about it.
I never even knew that was a spinoff of Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
I've heard of the show, but I didn't realize they were connected.
Yep. Yep, I know. Look up Wikipedia for that. But luckily, there's an episode of Justice League Unlimited called Epilogue, and that pretty much, like, wraps up Batman Beyond in its entirety. And it's such a goddamn good episode.
It really is. I love that episode.
I had to, like, dig out my DVDs after I was done watching Batman, because I was like, oh, where's my Justice League Unlimited? I need to finish this off. But
well, that's
on
Netflix, too, isn't it?
Are the Unlimited episodes up there?
They were, as of a couple months ago. I watched the whole Justice League in there.
Well, then, I am an idiot for digging out my DVDs. It's probably better quality, anyway. Yeah, so that was my night. I stayed up till like 6 in the morning watching cartoons.
Cool.
No, it's not cool. It's kind of sad.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. It's kind of what I do, except I'm watching Parks and Rec, which is kind of a cartoon.
All right, we'll go with it.
Whatever.
Whatever.
All right, so then are we all caught up? Is that all the things?
That's literally everything I've done.
Okay. I don't know what to do about news. I don't really have anything written down because it's been like 2 months. Do we cover 2 months worth of news or?
Nah, I just do recent shit.
And I was just kind of like, I really don't even care about anything. I don't even know what to talk about right now.
There's Kickstarters.
Okay, go for it.
Let's see, Comcept, which is run by Keiji Inafune, who's like the Mega Man dude. He has a Kickstarter for a game called Mighty No. 9, which is basically Mega Man without, you know, the Mega Man licensing.
With a really hideous design, that character looks awful.
You think it's hideous? I think it's...
What the fuck is he wearing? What is that?
I guess like some sort of rubber tubing.
Yeah, no, I don't like the design. He's got the weird goggles and the weird headphones and then the weird jacket thing and these tubular... I really don't like the design.
I feel he's a bit over-designed, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know about hideous. I don't think it's great. But the game itself sounds like it might be pretty cool.
It has potential. Like, at first, when I just thought it was Comcept, I'm like, what the hell is everyone getting so excited about? Have you guys played a Comcept game? Like, they're not that great. But then, as Seth pointed out, the folks behind the Zero series, right?
Yep.
Are working on the game. And that gave me a little bit more hope. But it's crazy to see, like, sometimes how the internet goes, like, apeshit over something. I look at it and I go, I don't know. I don't know, but I mean it seems all right. I mean, has there really been a whole lot of like demonstration of like gameplay or anything? Am I missing anything, or is it just like Keiji Inafune, the guy who actually didn't create Mega Man, is doing a Mega Man like game, but really he's not because it's other people doing it?
Well, I mean,
am I missing something? Because that's kind of
he's putting it together, Craig.
Okay.
I mean, you gotta start somewhere.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to sound too cynical, because this could be really rad, and, like, if it hits, like the console goal, which they lowered, because that was fucking apeshit crazy, 2.5 million. You can't convince me that it costs almost three times the amount of the initial, like, goal to port to, like, an eight-year-old system. I don't think so.
I think they're easily going to hit this goal. I mean, they're already about $1 million over their, like...
Yeah.
Marker goal, and they're like, I think $400,000 within the console goal. So
it's gonna,
and there's, yeah, and there's still like 23 days left on this thing.
It was very quick. So,
when is this game expected to come out?
Like
a year or two away, right?
Yeah, it's so far away.
Yeah, I think that's
why they need $2.5 billion to have an Xbox 360 game out like 10 years after the system.
I know, and like a year and a half after the Xbox One is out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I know. Crazy. I mean, there are things that make me skeptical. I don't want to come off too cynical, but I mean, when it does hit that console goal, I might throw some money at it. I mean, I like the idea of having like an art book and stuff from it, even though the character looks terrible. But I mean, what is that, like $120, I think, to get like
the art book goal's like even too expensive for my blood. Where is the art book? Oh yeah, it's $120 for the art book.
Yeah, I think it's like $120, and that's signed too, right? It's signed.
Is it?
And then you get, like, physical boxes and manuals and stuff, too.
I like that.
And I think you get a t-shirt at that point. I mean, the $120, you actually get a healthy amount of stuff.
The signed art book is actually $250.
Oh, okay, my mistake, then.
So $120 just gets you the art book.
But then it gives you previous goals, too, which include, like, a physical box.
There's a t-shirt, boxes, a manual.
Yeah, so, I mean, you get a decent amount of stuff. And the game, of course. For $120, so I'm still thinking about throwing. I mean, I am unemployed, and this game is very far away. I might fucking lose interest, or not even like I don't know. I might forget about it completely. But yeah, I might throw $120 at it. Like I said, I don't want to sound too cynical. It's just I am a little skeptical, though.
It's fine.
Yeah,
they did. The Zero series is good. I haven't played ZX and ZX Advent, but Inti Creates was the developer on that as well. And then
those.
I liked those. And then they also were the developer on Mega Man 9 and 10, and I love 9. I thought 10 was pretty bad, though. But You know, like, 5 out of 7
isn't bad.
You know, the weird thing about me and Kickstarters is that I'm more apt to fund something from someone I haven't heard of than I am to fund something that, you know, to completely, like, I'll fund, like, the Ouya, or I funded, like, this action RPG called Cryamore, and I'm more willing to do that than I am, like, fund, like, I mean, like, Keiji Inafune, like, he's a big name, but, like, I really, like, I am really skeptical that Keiji Inafune can deliver an awesome game. I don't know when's the last time he did. And, or, like, when, like, who was it? Obsidian. Was it Obsidian 1 to, like, kickstart an RPG? And I'm like, yeah, have you guys ever played an Obsidian RPG? They're usually pretty terrible. So I'm more apt to take a chance on, like, someone I've never heard of than take a chance on someone who I'm like, you know what I mean?
So tell us about your opinions on the Shantae Kickstarter, Craig.
Here we go.
It's basically the same thing. I don't really have much to say, like, that's very scathing. I mean, honestly, like, I don't think the two commercial Shantaes that they released were really that good. They have a lot of character, a lot of personality. I can tell a lot of heart went into making those games. But I don't think they're that good. So then to ask money, you know, to fund the third one, or is this going to be the fourth one? I mean, what order? Because they already have another one in development. They've made two commercially. They have a third one in development, and then they're asking money for the fourth. I don't understand WayForward's. They're doing something wrong, I think, honestly, financially. I don't understand it.
Yeah, it seems very weird that they're releasing the 3DS one, which should be out before the end of this year.
I think that's the goal,
Yeah.
So there's a 3DS one coming, but then they have a Kickstarter for a console version. I don't know if console version is just that much more, or development is that much more expensive for them. I don't know why they aren't planning to just, like, wait till the 3DS game is out and then use the profits from that game to fund the next one. But that's what they're doing. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, no, me neither. I just don't
think. I mean, if you're planning on buying the game anyway, I guess it's all gone now, but you could got the game for, like, $3 cheaper than it's going to release at anyway through the Kickstarter.
I like when Kickstarters do that, when, like, they offer, like, you know, early bird special and you get a few bucks off. You know.
Yeah, I kicked in for that option because I figure I'll probably buy this anyway, so I might as well get $3 off.
Mm-hmm.
I will check out the 3DS one, but if this is their last chance, it's 3 strikes and you're out.
Video of the 3DS one's looking really good. I'm actually playing for the first time, really, because I didn't play all that far the first time, the Game Boy Color game. And I will give my impressions on that later on.
Okay. I didn't like it. I played it on the eShop, and I thought, did we talk about this last episode? I feel like I've talked about it, but it was so long ago.
I think we did talk about it, but I don't know if that was the one that the lost episode. So.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, no, I didn't really, I didn't care for it.
I can't believe we killed a goat live on the air on that last episode.
It's crazy, right?
I don't know what
and
we were
also
thinking.
No reason now, because nobody's ever going to hear it.
I know. I mean, it really, like, fit into the whole theme we were going for perfectly.
I'm not
but
just edit or anything.
No, nah, out of context, it just sounds cruel. But no, we had something.
At any rate, there's a 2DS, which...
I forgot about that thing.
Yeah, I think the collective reaction was like, what? And even I was like that. I was like, are you serious? Is this a joke? Like, it felt like an April Fool's joke, right?
Mm-hmm. That was my first reaction. Somebody just posted a picture on Facebook and didn't link to anything, and I was like, this has to be a joke.
This looks like a door wedge. But then my reaction was like, okay, no, I get this. Like, once I understood what was happening with this thing, like, I totally got it and I get it. And I'm buying it because I'm, you know, a dual screen collector. Yes, that too. You know, I'm not the target audience. And I think many of our listeners are probably not the target audience. But I see what Nintendo's going for. I think, you know, if they wanted to aim towards, like, a budget line specifically for kids and all that, I really think $100 would have been the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
But... Maybe that was just really hard to get to. $130 still isn't that bad. I mean, you can go out and get this game and get Pokemon. They come out on the same day for the same price as, like, a regular 3DS costs by itself. And, you know, obviously less than what a 3DS XL costs by itself. So that's pretty good, you know? And it has all the features. Like, the only thing it really doesn't do is the stereoscopic 3D. So...
Right.
Or fold up.
Yeah, but that's not really a feature. That's not.
Is it?
Well, I was having this discussion on Twitter with people, like, What kids do you know put stuff in there? Have you seen kids' jeans? Have you seen their tiny little jeans? What is going... What, matchbox cars go in those pockets. 3DS is going in those pockets.
I'm just picturing a kid with a non-clamshell design and just thinking of scratch screens like crazy.
Yeah, but almost every device in the world other than the DS and the 3DS lines have exposed screens.
Yeah, but they usually have the, what is that? It's like glass now that doesn't scratch very easily, you know?
Well, now, but I mean, you know, we grew up with Game Boys with their screens exposed to the world like a bunch of hussies.
And I know.
Nothing. I mean, accidents happen. I mean, really, I mean, on the DSs, on the dual screen systems, like, it's usually the hinge that goes. I mean, that's the most vulnerable point, not the screens. So I wonder if this actually just, you know, gets rid of the biggest problem. I mean, the screens are going to scratch. Someone's going to scratch the screen. Listen, human adults fuck shit up. I don't understand how people drop stuff. Those are your fingers. How did it fall out of there? Like, millions of years of evolution, you dropped your fucking iPhone like a fucking ding-dong with your thumb. I don't even understand that.
I think I see more people with cracked iPhone screens than non-cracked iPhone screens.
So, you know, we're like, oh, children break... No, I've seen way more adults break their stupid shit like a bunch of fucking idiots than I'll ever see children break the screens. Because children love those things. That's why they don't go in their pockets. They hold them very carefully in their hand. I had my Game Boy. It never left my hand. It was always in my hand. So, yeah, I don't think the exposed screens... Everyone's trying to cite that as a problem. I don't think that's nearly as big of a problem as people think it is. So...
You might be right. Also, I'm not sure on the name, because I don't know how
the
confusing this is going to be to people.
The worst part, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is the big mistake here. Not the fact that it exists, it's name. Parents are going to buy this thing, and they're going to be like, I only see 3DS games, where are the 2DS games?
They should have called it the Nintendo 3DS 2D.
Or maybe like the 3DS Lite, like, I don't know.
No. Junior?
Like
Junior?
No, that's Junior awful. No, you're right, but the point is they're trying to communicate something, and you're sending mixed messages with 2DS.
Uh-huh.
With Junior, yeah. As awful as that name is, you're communicating something specific there.
You're turning off, like, a potential people, though, who might just bite on a snack. They're like, Junior, I don't want some kids.
No, that's a fair point. Then maybe I don't have a better suggestion, but 2DS was not a good idea.
No.
To be fair, the 3DS wasn't a great name either. That confused people already, and so did the Wii U. So,
well, Wii U did the 3DS really? I think people got over the 3DS thing really quickly.
Maybe they did, but I seem to remember people talking about that. But it was never something that bothered me, obviously. But
I remember reading like some Amazon review of a Professor Layton game, and like half the reviews were like, "Why doesn't this game play on my DS?" And you know, because it was one of the new 3DS Professor Laytons. Mm-hmm. People are dumb.
I really feel like people are dumber. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, you didn't have to explain to people that a Super Nintendo was not a game that was super on your Nintendo. It was a completely different system. Now, like, Wii U... Like, I get it. The names are similar. Like, you're sitting on the internet. You can use it to jerk off and look at cat pictures. But it does more than that, I promise. And you can just type in Google, like, Wii U... And, like, literally, like in, like, 30 seconds, you can figure out that that's a completely different thing. You have the world's... biggest repository of human knowledge in our history at your fingertips, and you use it to jerk off looking at pictures.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I was looking at cat pictures.
Jerking off, yeah, right? So, no, I really do feel like people are dumber. I do. And I hate to say that. I hate to be like a, you know, generalizing jerk that stereotypes people. But, man, I look at like the way some people like, that's mad. Like, you're sitting there on your smartphone playing Candy Crush. Exit out of that thing, download Wikipedia, and look it up. Jesus Christ. What's that? Get the fuck off the phone. Give me that phone. You don't deserve that. Pain in the ass. So that's the thing. We have a launch date for the Xbox One. That is November 22nd, which is a crazy expensive day if you like video games. That the Xbox One...
Craig, what else comes out on November 22nd?
I'm glad you asked, Seth Castellum. Xbox One, Super Mario 3D Land, The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds... Mario Party, yeah. Some subtitle I
Who
don't
cares?
Know for the 3DS.
20.
And Tearaway on the Vita.
All right.
Which
but what,
will
what
ever
good games about. Come out on that day?
What good games? Are you waiting for more?
Yes.
Okay. What am I?
Whatever Xbox One launch titles there are.
There are zero good games.
Nah, I'm pretty sure I need Link Between Worlds, at least.
I said that.
No, I know. I know you said that.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm backtracking on my there's
I,
no good
I
games.
I plan to get all of those except for, like, Tearaway. I don't... Media Molecule has not proven to me that they are capable of a single-player game, so... Everyone's like, it looks so cute! And I'm like, I'm sure it's super cute. I mean, so was, like, Little Big Planet. It was also super boring to play that single-player, so... I don't want to play a super boring game and then have to poke at it every 20 seconds.
That's the entire point of the game, Craig.
I think that's my impression.
So you're just not down with the concept of the game.
The concept might be fun. The problem is, I mean, I've had experience. Like the Vita came with this game, my Vita did anyway, because it was a launch bundle. It came with this game called Little Deviants, and I thought it'd be great. It'd be like the Wii Sports. Maybe not, you know, such a cultural phenomenon, but it'd be similar in concept for the Vita. Like, it would show you, like, the Vita, like, you know, features and all that. And I discovered that it's actually really cumbersome to play with such a big system and then have to juggle it back and forth and have to touch the screen or touch the back panel. Like, there was this one mini game in Little Deviants, and it was actually fun, but it was just cumbersome to play. Like, it had, like, a Hollywood Squares kind of grid. And doors would randomly open, and there'd be, like, a robot or something. I think they were robots. Enemies would be there. And they'd be either facing you or facing away. And you had to, like, tap, like, their weak points. You had to either touch the front or the back. Now, imagine doing that and just constantly juggling the system back and forth. And I sort of, like, I think about Tearaway, where you have to, like, manipulate things on the rear touch panel and the front touch screen. And I feel like I've already done that, and it's actually not a fun thing to do. Especially with a system so, like... The Vita is a healthy sized system.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't really. I mean, I've only briefly played a Vita, so I can't picture it. I mean, I know I get what you're conveying, but I can't, you know, fully wrap my head around it without actually, like, getting a grip on the size and having to hold it with one hand and stuff like that.
And that I have a Vita, and that doesn't sound like something I want to do. So.
And from what I gather from Tearaway, like, I'm sure there are non touchscreen points, but I mean, that's. Manipulating things with the touch panel and the touch screen seemed to be a key feature to that game. And I'm telling you, as someone who's played a game that's already done that, it's not super fun. I think Media Molecule's only made, like, Little Big Planet 1 and 2. I think they had a hand in the other Little Big Planet games, but I don't think they were, like, significant developers in any of those. Mm-hmm. And I really don't like the single player in those games. I look at a wide array of other, like, side-scrolling platformers on the market now, and I would rather play, like, any one of those other than Little Big Planet. I don't know why anyone would choose that over Mario or Rayman or Super Meat Boy or something. It's really dull.
It seems more tailored towards maybe, like, the people who want to develop their own crap.
It is, but you have to, in order to get all the crap, you have to play the single player, because it's all, like, in bubbles and shit in the single player that you collect. Exactly. We've got some Kickstarters, we've got the 2DS, and we got the bunch of release stuff on November 22nd. Do we have anything else we'd like to discuss?
Yep, I do.
What's up?
Xseed is bringing Trails of Heroes, Legends of the Sky. Wait, no, I just did that all backwards. Legend of Heroes, Trails in the Sky.
Yeah.
I think I just had, like, a aneurysm there. They're bringing that to the first game, which is already on PSP. They're bringing that to the PC through Steam. And then the second game in that series, Second Chapter, is what it's called, is coming to both PC and PSP. So anybody who, like, has been left on cliffhanger in Trails in the Sky for the past however long until that game's been out, there's more coming. We're actually getting more.
Yeah, it's a digital download. It's not. There won't be a physical release for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because I like Xseed Special Editions very much, but...
I haven't played the first game. I'm just going to get that on PC. Because I much prefer playing the Ease games on PC than I did on the PSP. So, I'm just going to go that route.
Right on. Is that it?
Sure.
All right, cool. Now we're going to do a pretty sizable mailbag. If you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can go to tvlist.net. There's a giant banner that says mailbag. You can post a comment, be a question. It can be something that you're playing and you want to share your thoughts on it, whatever.
And we'll answer it in 2 months.
And we'll answer it. Right. We'll take a little while to get there. Yeah, some of these are from July. July 23rd is the oldest one here.
I tried to go through and delete everything that was either stupid or no longer relevant. So this is what is left over.
Which is still 27 comments. So,
yeah.
If you've been listening to the show, if you're a newcomer to the show, whatever, just come on by, post something if you haven't. First up, we have Michael. and he says, "Hey, commie, Seth, and that pig cross loving guy." I think he's calling you a commie, Chris.
Damn it! They found me out.
With the Wii U, 3DS, and Vita already out, and the PS4 and Xbox are on the way, I wanted to know what your top five favorite games of last generation are. Thanks. I gotta be honest, and this is nothing against Michael. I'm sure Michael's a wonderful human being. I hate these questions. I hate these questions.
Fuck you, Michael.
No, Mike, I'm sure Michael's just I'm sure he's a pleasant human being. Do people really, like, catalog these things? Like, here are my top five, and then they can rattle them, because... Let me tell you something. I own 220 DS games. I own about 120, 130 Xbox 360 games. Maybe 70 to 80 PS3 games. About 100 PSP games. About 100 Wii games. And when you factor in digital, that's over 700 games that I own, that I just own, let alone games that I played and I don't own. For me to construct a top five out of over 700 games is probably impossible. So I just play games, and I might say something like, "Oh, yeah, this is one of my favorites." But to actually, like, construct an actual, like, numbered list is... I don't think I can do that.
I just make shit up when people ask me questions like this. And I just say something different every time. Nobody pays attention. It doesn't matter.
No. I've been trying to do, like, videos for, like, my platform. Like, I did one for the DS, and I'm probably going to do one for the PS3 now that the life cycles are dying down. And I'll do, like, a top 10. It's not really, like, an order or anything. And that top 10 might be a moving target, actually. Like, in, like, a year, it might feel completely different, you know?
But to answer your question, Michael, Donkey Kong, Country Returns, Dead Rising something, what's a video game? Fallout?
What's a video game?
Seth is just naming the first games that come to his mind.
Klonoa, No More Heroes, and Odom Adeus Excellent.
That's a terrible game. Are you insane?
There you go. There's five.
Wow. Okay. Chris, do you have any input on this?
I don't know.
Spider-Man.
No, I'd probably say Batman Arkham Asylum will be on there. The Phoenix Wright games on DS, I love those. Mario Galaxy. I don't know. Leave me alone. That's all I got. Picross DS.
Yeah.
I like the sex flash games on Newgrounds.
Do they still make those?
I have not been to Newgrounds since I was a teenager. I have no idea.
I didn't know Newgrounds was still around.
I know, right? Someone's got to publish flash games. They got to go somewhere.
I guess. I mean, is flash even still a thing? Is that something that people use? I thought it was all the HTML5 now.
Some places still bug me about flash. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what is this fucking 18th century? Get the fuck out of here with this. You want me to use Real Media Player, too? Get out of here.
You don't have Shockwave installed, Chris. I mean, I called you Chris, whatever.
I don't have it installed either, so.
Good. Brandon says, "Hey guys, instead of asking a question, I'm just going to leave this here. Hopefully you get to see it before you record. You post a video here, which I will post in the show notes for episode 125.
If she had posted it sooner before we recorded, I could have looked at it.
Right, July 24th. This is date stamped here. He says, it's a YouTube video. He's been subscribed to the Archfiend for a long time, and he's a smart guy. If you ask me, he pretty much nailed my opinions on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. I don't understand why anyone would be selfish enough to throw money at a wall for the sake of their own entertainment when I could go towards buying a dying person medication they need to survive. Thanks for taking my questions. Always love the podcast." You know, the way Brandon frames this at the end, we're like, I don't know why people throw money at the wall for themselves rather than buy medication for dying people. Like, that sounds really cartoonish, so I don't know if he's being serious. Because he prefaces it kind of seriously, like, oh, I think Archfiend is a smart guy, and he nailed my opinion. So I don't know how to take this. So I'm trying not to be a dick, but that sounds like a really buffoonish thing, and that's pretty much what the Archfiend tries to start. Archfiend, I don't like him. I've watched some of his videos in his past. I don't think he's a smart guy. Like, what he says sounds really smart on the surface, and he talks very slow and deliberately. Too slow for my taste. He'll do, like, one video, one topic, and it's, like, 15 minutes long. It's like, dude, get to the fucking point. But I don't... In this video, yeah, he tries to make the point that, like, oh, why would anyone buy something when you could go to charity? Like, why would you buy anything? Why would I have a 50-inch screen TV over here. Like, are you going to get on my balls about that, too? Like, I don't understand. Where do you draw that line? where I can't buy anything frivolous, but I should give it to charity.
Yeah, the way he frames it in the video is like, why would you help these indie people make a game instead of helping these people live? But I'm not helping these indie people. I'm pre-ordering myself a damn video game. That's right. What I'm doing.
I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, that's where much of the argument falls apart. Where, well, because he also tries to say that, like a lot of these people who make things, like he specifically mentions Smosh or Smosh or whatever, who make comedy videos on YouTube. And I think he also alludes to the Angry Video Game Nerd. You know, he points out these people are already rich and they're already making money, like, and they want you to invest and take all the risk. And I'm like, as a collective, are we taking the risk? Yeah, but me personally, I'm taking like $15 worth of risk. Like, that's not a whole lot. And you should do your research before you do anything on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Like, if someone comes on there and thinks they're buying something, you're nuts, and you shouldn't be on Kickstarter. But that's that person. That's not Smosh's or Angry Video Game Nerd's fault. People should understand what they're doing if they're on Kickstarter or Indiegogo. But obviously, you know, if you contribute X amount of dollars, you usually get the product for a fair price. So in that sense, if it does come to fruition, in that sense, you are basically buying it. You got – that's your return on investment. That's what's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to frame it as these rich people doing something, man, I don't know what they've already fronted on their own. I don't know how rich. I know nothing about them. This guy presumes that they're rich. Like, I don't know. I don't know. That's weird to me. I don't know. Maybe they can shoulder the development of an iPhone game, but, like, maybe not.
But, yeah, your point that you brought up earlier, you can't just think of it as not helping these other people. I mean, first of all, I do donate money to different charities whenever I can.
Same here.
I give money to I give food to drifters. I don't give money.
Oh, dude, I'm busting, dude, a Philly cheesesteak the other day. but you can't look at it as, like, not helping these other... I mean, otherwise, like, you literally can't buy yourself anything without doing the exact same thing.
Right. The argument doesn't hold water.
Any money you put toward yourself is money that's not going to help other people. Exactly. I mean, there's very few true humanitarians that can actually do that. And, I mean, hats off to them, because that's crazy awesome of them. But it's just not practical for most people.
No. So, no, I don't think this video is particularly smart. A lot of his videos are just actually bragging on other people on YouTube. Like, that's... And he has way more subscribers than I do. I have, like, almost 17,000. He has, like, over 36,000. So maybe people like watching someone rag on other people on YouTube. But I don't.
Next, Craig.
And he likes to... Yeah, right. He's going to listen to this. Listen, he can do whatever he wants, and people can listen to whatever they want. I'm just saying, it ain't for me. I don't like his videos, and I don't like this one, so...
This is the only one I've watched of his.
I've seen a couple in the past. It's been a couple years, I think. But, yeah, no, I don't really care for his videos. Dictator Zom. Oh my god, I'm not reading this.
But he's going back to school, Craig.
He's going back to school. He talks about algebra, Congress, I don't know. And it's all one sentence. Azam, I love you, man. You probably need a couple more years. Listen, dude, don't call high school hell school when you post comments like that.
Here's the gist of it. He's been homeschooled for a while, but apparently he's been depressed and bored because of it. Now he's going back to an actual school. And
is that in the comment?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
I mean, this is all in here.
my eyes fell out of my head when I was outside to pick them up. I couldn't.
He's going back to school because apparently if he does, his mom will buy him a PS4. But he's sort of regretting his decision because he's, like, freaked out. About
maybe he has anxiety problems.
Oh, probably.
You can get that checked out.
Have fun at school. That's all.
Yeah,
good luck.
Don't have anxiety attack.
Oh, that's awful.
That will trigger.
That's good advice, Craig. Just don't have those.
Just don't.
Yeah, don't. There's nothing to panic about.
I can joke about it because I have anxiety attacks. Okay.
I mean, just saying this is starting to make me. All right, let's move on.
All right. Someone with a really weird name asked us our favorite system of all time. And for me, it's either the Dreamcast or the DS. I'm not really sure, like, the all-time favorite. But, I mean, if you want to break it down, Dreamcast, obviously, favorite console. DS, favorite handheld. And the 3DS is coming close on usurping that title. It's a really good successor to the DS.
It's like the Genesis or the GameCube, maybe.
Interesting choices.
Somewhere in there. It changes all the time.
Yeah. Mine's probably the Super NES or the DS.
Got some good choices. We got good taste.
I mean, nobody said Jaguar, so we're okay.
Right on. Noah says, a question for Chris. Does Picross E2 have a zoom function? I downloaded the first one, which is great, but fuck the 15x15 puzzles. Even on my XL, they're a bitch to play. And I cannot even fathom playing them on an original 3DS.
I don't believe it does. I think the functionality is all the same as the first Picross E, aside from adding the Micross mode, whatever. I know that the DS game had a zoom function. I never liked that because I like to see the whole puzzle when I'm doing it. I don't want to zoom in. So I don't believe it does. But if it did, it may be there, and I just never noticed it because I don't like it.
Is it hard to hit the panels?
I never had a problem. I never even considered that I would want a zoom function. So that's why I say it might be there, and I just never noticed it. But maybe I have never had a problem with it.
Chris is not the Picross guru we thought he was.
Maybe Noah needs like old man glasses or something.
He's probably using that giant like chunky like stylus that came with the DSi XL. How does that work?
I used that for a while when I couldn't find the DSXL stylus.
I like how it looks like a pen, and it looks like it has like a clip, but it's not really a clip. What, can you put a clip on this thing? I can't put this in my pocket to save my life. Are you crazy? Next up we have Garrett, and oh boy. He says, in regards to Greg's comment about there being no liberal presence up on Capitol Hill, I agree. The modern Democrat Party is a bunch of moderate conservatives, while the GOP is a fucking joke. I don't know if I would paint the Democrats as moderate conservatives, but maybe. The GOP is definitely a joke. A vote for them is a waste of vote. Vote for the Libertarian Party. No, don't do that. Don't vote Libertarian. Anything outside of the left-right paradigm, or anything outside of the left-right paradigm, because God knows, whenever you ask someone they voted for Obama in 2012, they say, well, it's better than the other guy. I have more reasons than that to vote for him, but that was a big one.
He is better than the other guy.
And on a side note, socialism is a very misused and perhaps misunderstood term. It definitely is. It definitely is. I like having a mixed economy. I like capitalist ideas and socialized ideas. Also, fuck Obama. He's a war criminal and should be impeached. Well, I don't know about that. But I'm not very happy with his continuation of Bush-era war policies, that's for sure. Or even the escalation of them in some cases, such as drones. Next up, we have David Cage is the Hitler of gaming. Guys, I don't like David Cage either, but guys...
I just like seeing Craig's reaction to these. This makes it all worth it.
Hello, guys whose mothers don't deserve to die and burn in hell, and Craig. Well, neither does my mother, to be honest. I don't like my mom, and I don't know how upset I'd be when she dies, but I don't wish death on her either, so... I just have one question for the crew. Do any of you guys watch the Showtime TV series Homeland? I watched... There's only two seasons, right? Because I watched two seasons, and I liked the first season... But I think that it was, like, deemed, like, too slow. So, like, it got really, like, buffoonish in the second season. It got really, like... It became, like, sixth season, like, 24, in my opinion. Hmm. And I didn't really care for the second season nearly as much.
I haven't watched it. I don't even know if we get Showtime here.
I haven't seen it either. I have wanted to, because I know at least the first season got pretty good reviews and stuff. But I have since signed up for Showtime, but I think they only have, like, the most recent season on demand, so hard to go and catch up.
Yep. Matt says, assuming you guys haven't already talked about it, this is posted July 28th, by the way, what do you guys think of this Phil Fish incident? You know, we talk about Phil Fish a lot, and Phil Fish, like, mostly rubs me the wrong way. But I mean, I don't know.
To be clear, the incident is the one where he got mad at the internet and said he was getting out of gaming business, right?
Well, right, because someone like... Because what happened was there was like some rumors, I think, about the Xbox One, like indie policies. And then So, like, every like outlets' reaction was to like hit up like Jonathan Blow and Phil Fish and be like, "Is this the case?" And like, you know, they were kind of annoyed. They were kind of like, "Dude, like, we're not the source. You know, why don't you go ask Microsoft? You're probably going to get a no comment, but odds are, like, that's probably what we have to say too, because we're probably under NDA."
Mm-hmm.
So they were just kind of like unhappy about the fact that like it was just really kind of boring journalism, and there was someone who runs all these people got like dumb names. Someone did something with a video show. I don't know, and he specifically like targeted like Phil Fish. Like, I don't think Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow's reactions to the press were really all that bad. They were just kind of like, guys, like, this is stupid. But this guy took it, like, next level, and he started, like, I don't know, like, insulting them, and he was really kind of, like, derogatory towards Blow and Fish. And I'm no fan of Fish, but I kind of understand where he's coming from. Like, that's really frustrating. Like, why? I know what it's like to, like, just make things and just be on the internet and people, like, get on your fucking case about stuff. And like I said, I'm no fan of Fish, but I don't know. I think that video or whatever was kind of stupid.
I just realized there needs to get a Blowfish, and that just made me laugh.
Right, well, that's actually what the guy calls him. He's like, "I'm going to call them Blowfish. Oh, you're so fucking clever, you literary genius."
No, it's pretty funny.
So,
I mean, I paid attention to zero. Like, basically, these days, or I guess not even that recently, but towards the end, like, whenever I just see Phil Fish's name in something, I'll just, like, skip over it because I was like, well, whatever.
He has a really volatile personality, you know? Like, so he's a magnet for this stuff. But I think in this case, it was really stupid. I think targeting him in this way was really stupid. And I know how frustrating that can be. I think his reaction was, you know, but whatever. That's how he feels. He wants to pull out, then whatever. Then you can do that. But that's what I think of the Phil Fish incident. You guys have any?
I think it's kind of dumb to pull your game you're working on just because some dude's bugging you, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's his game. He can do what he wants with it.
No, I agree. I can just empathize because I know, like, on a much smaller micro scale, like, how frustrating stuff like that can be. But, and he does get a lot. I mean, it's just so weird because it's like in the indie scene, we build up these personalities such as Fish or Blow or like the dudes Team Meat, and then we treat them almost like we treat like celebrities in almost a kind of like tabloid kind of way sometimes, and it's really stupid and childish, and we really shouldn't do that.
Stupid and childish stuff in this industry, Craig?
What am I talking about?
I think not. We are all the utmost sophisticated gentlemen.
I mean, if you want to discuss, like, I mean, I think there are probably better ways to discuss these things than normally. I mean, even I get hyperbolic about it sometimes, you know? Normally because I'm trying to go for, you know, a humor angle to our listeners, but even that's probably not the best way to do it, you know? That made me realize, like, this is kind of silly, like, how we talk about Phil Fish. He's super annoying, but, like, who really cares? It's not news.
I don't know. Canceled game is news, right?
Not canceled game is news. You're right. Yes. But I think that, like, Phil Fish's reaction to being asked for comment about something he probably can't comment on, and he's not really the source anyway.
Yeah, that's dumb.
It's dumb. So, like, the catalyst to him, like, pulling the game was dumb. Like, that shouldn't even existed. That was stupid.
Yep. No argument
there. Agreed.
Chaos Hunter says, Craig, when you were telling your story of how you lost your job last podcast, you never said the most interesting part. What was the quote-unquote stupid mistake you made? Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm a little freer to talk about my job now, I guess. My job, I was a lead for a team responsible for the global data center at Pfizer's Global Research and Development Headquarters. That not only entailed that site, but a sister site in the next town over, across the river, and then a satellite site about an hour away. So I was responsible for those data centers, the environment in those data centers, and the network infrastructure supporting all three of those sites. The sister site in the next town over was eventually closed. We sold that building to someone else. At the end, it was really just the two sites. I hadn't had a raise in 5 years. In fact, I had a pay cut in that time. Our team, every 4 to 6 months or so, had new responsibilities dumped on us because some other team somewhere was dissolved, or cut down or whatever, and they needed someone to do some stupid bullshit. And I would walk in, and there was no real management. There was no supervision, no training, no documentation, no operating procedures. You would walk in and be like, here's this new thing you have to do, and you can't fuck up because this is a Fortune 500 company and this is a production data center. And you'd be like, so how do I do this? And they'd be like, oh, Google it. Google was my operating procedure in a production data center. I want to make that clear. And you know what? A lot of my nights, I worked at night, about 12 to 13 hours a night, weren't really that busy. But you were responsible for a ton of shit. So, like, you may not be doing a ton of work. Sometimes you were. But you may not be doing a ton of work in that time, but you were responsible for a bunch. You had to keep checking on it, make sure. I mean, it was nuts how much minutia I was responsible for towards the end. And then because of cuts, because I wasn't a Pfizer employee, I was employed to another company that was subcontracted through, like, HP or something like that. That's how Byzantine this shit is. And because of cuts, I was a lead. The word lead was in my title. I was a supervisor. I led nobody because my entire night shift team was dissolved. I worked by myself for about the last 6 months or so there, 12 to 13 hours a night. And so I'm just trying to paint a picture of the atmosphere. Plus, we already had hanging over heads that this data center was going to be closed by the end of the year, this year, 2013. So I just want to paint you a picture. No raises, pay cuts, data centers closing, tons of new responsibilities. Your team is smaller. I just want to paint a picture of this. And so what happened was I had, like I said, I was responsible for the environment, which includes the temperature, the humidity. Like, data centers get hot. Think about your computer. Now think about thousands of those in a room. So when you see, like, a TV show or a movie and they're walking in a data center and there's a bunch of servers and they're not yelling at each other over the air conditioners, that place is going to catch on fire because that's not how it works. There are, like, air handlers the size of cars. We had several of them. And so you have to monitor these things, the electrical output, all this stuff. We had an application that did this, but the application was constantly broken. And in this case, it had been broken about 3 weeks. And so I couldn't rely on the application. And then at the end of our shift, we are supposed to do, like, just a little walk around, make sure, you know, no ninjas have broken in, stolen anything, nothing's on fire. And so, like I said, just think, keep in mind everything I've said. And I was doing this walkthrough, and I missed a problem. And that's my fault. Like, I think those things are mitigating circumstances, but they obviously don't excuse me from dropping the ball. I dropped the ball. And Pfizer doesn't need to tolerate mistakes from contractors. You made a mistake. And there was no impact. To be clear, there's no impact from me not noticing this thing. It's one of those things where, like, well, if XYZ happened, there could have been a problem. But there wasn't. But Pfizer looked at that and said, nah. And so I was let go. And it was really, like, it was really polite. Like, my boss, honestly, I think if it was up to my actual boss from the company that signed my paychecks, I think he would have told me to get my head out of my ass and not do it again. And that would have been the end of it. But, he has to, like, preserve the contract, so he has to get rid of people that seem problematic. And that's what happened. So I was just really stressed out, and I missed this small thing, and that's it. I had never been written. No, I worked there for over 8 years. I worked in an IT job for over 8 years as a contractor to a place like Pfizer, which just constantly lays people off. Like, that doesn't happen by mistake. Like, I wasn't bad at my job. It's just, so that's what happens, you know? Just boot you out. So a little bit of a long story, but it's pretty frustrating.
Mm-mm. That story, Craig. I mean, that blows, Craig.
I mean, it's hard because it's like I made the mistake. There's nothing I can say. Like, I can say all that. I haven't had a raise in years. I can say all that stuff. Doesn't really matter. I made the mistake. But that, whether you like to think so or not, all that shit collects and affects your morale and your output, unfortunately.
Yep.
And he also asks, how good would you say you are at Japanese? Can you watch Japanese anime or TV shows and understand it fully? No, I can't. How good are you at reading Japanese? I am better at reading it than I am understanding it. Are you slow at it or fast? I am slow. I've been trying Pimsleur Japanese, which you recommended in a podcast long ago. I think it is good, but I find myself having to go back to earlier lessons as taking it in can be hard. That's what you're supposed to do, actually. I mean, repetition is actually part of the Pimsleur approach. You are supposed to go back to earlier lessons. It seems like I listen to it, get so far, and then have to start from episode one again. Well, that's pretty far back. And then get a little past the episode I was stuck on, and then go back to episode one again. This happened to you. Yeah, no, I mean, I go back. Like I said, you're supposed to. Occasionally, like, the narrator will tell you, like, start this episode, you know, when you listen tomorrow, start at such and such point. Yeah, no, repetition is definitely part of the Pimsleur approach, yeah. Popular Pancakes, which I... Guys, if you're going to go for fun names, go for names like Popular Pancakes, not like Hitler and shit.
Go for the safe, boring shit, guys. My name's Craig. No, everything's popular offensive.
Pancakes. Popular Pancakes is right. Your username is a fucking Jawa. I don't want to hear anything. You have no room to talk.
Whatever. I made that name when I was like 11 or 12.
Uh-huh. I don't care. Popular Pancakes is a rad name. Hey guys, love the podcast and videos from day one. I just got the iPhone 5 and I've been going through all these crappy iOS games. Do you guys have any recommendations for good iOS games? Thanks. Super Hexagon! Super Hexagon is the best game you can play on your iPhone.
I only play real video games, so I can't say.
You play Super Hexagon on the PC.
Yeah, on a computer, which makes it a real game, Craig.
Super Hexagon doesn't need buttons.
It's so good. Super Hexagon is fantastic. Ridiculous Fishing is great. Tiny Wings, Groove Coaster. Puzzle and Dragons is good. That's a game of like in-app purchases where you have to buy like doodads to keep. But it's balanced so well that you may never even have to buy anything. It's actually a pretty solid little puzzle RPG, and I like it a lot. And it's huge. It makes the company like millions of dollars each day.
Is that Gung Ho's game?
That's Gung Ho's game, yeah. And I downloaded it out of curiosity. Turns out it's actually not bad. It's actually really good, and they really actually balance those knickknacks that you have to, you know, you earn them. They hand them out like candy. They hand, oh, what? It's some weird holiday in a country you've never heard of? Here, have like 10 crystals. And they just hand them. I'm like, why would anyone buy these? But then I realized, like, as I was playing the game is so good, you don't mind buying them here and there. Like, you buy them because you want to, not because you feel obligated. Like, a lot of other games make you feel like you have to buy their stupid resources. And Puzzle and Dragon doesn't feel that way.
I like it, Craig, supporting in-app purchases.
I am.
Downfall of gaming, Craig. It's going to come crumbling down, and you're going to be sitting on the sidelines cheering it on.
But those, I mean, a lot of these games are a bit older, too. I'm not really hipping with it, because I kind of fell out of it. But, I mean, those are what's on my phone, those mainstays, like Tiny Wings, Super Hexagon, Ridiculous Fishing, and Puzzle and Dragons are on my phone. Do you have any recommendations, Chris?
I don't play too many iOS games, but the three I was going to recommend are the ones that you just mentioned, Tiny Wings, Super Hexagon, and Ridiculous Fishing.
Sounds unanimous if you don't count Seth because he's stupid. So
Rayman Jungle Run is pretty good, too.
That is a good one, too. I was actually surprised by how much that actually preserved the current Rayman experience in like a one-button kind of runner. That's actually a lot of fun to play.
I mean, if you're not going to count me because I'm stupid, then I'm never going to get like any input anywhere here.
As long as you know.
Let's make it clear here. Bob says, hey, Craig, Seth, and Chris. Just want to say I've enjoyed the podcast and recently the tangents on feminism and patriotism. That's interesting because I felt bad when I talk about politics and patriotism and stuff. Not the feminism so much, but definitely. People take politics very personally. And I feel like you really probably shouldn't. Like who I vote for affects, you know, potentially affects someone else and vice versa. Like, it really shouldn't be that personal. But the thing is, people put, when you try to discuss policy and stuff, people, they don't hear you discussing policy. They hear you talk, like, discussing, like, their personal stake in that policy, unfortunately. And it escalates, but. As such, I wanted to ask if any of you have ever been selected for jury duty. If so, how did you feel about it? Excited, inconvenienced, indignant? Thanks again for keeping me so entertained, Bob. Well, let me tell you, Bob. Indignant? No. Excited? A little bit. Inconvenienced? A lot. And the thing is that I was selected 3 years in a row as if there was no one else in this whole fucking state to fucking harass to go to jury duty. What happens is if you're selected, you have to call like this number, like the night before, the Friday before, whatever. And they'll like a recording will tell you if you're needed. And this is because a lot of cases could be civil cases and they settled and now you're not needed anymore. And then that only prevents you from being selected for jury duty for, like, the court year or whatever. Like, I don't even know what court year is, because it must be pretty fucking short. So then I was selected the following year. Again, I was the first time I was told that I was selected again. I'm like, what the fuck? And it was less than a year, so I don't know. Maybe the court year is, like, less than a calendar year. I don't know. And that time I wasn't needed either. They selected me a third time, so three times in less than 3 years. And I'm like, God damn it, I know people twice my age who have been selected once. Are you insane? But that time I was needed. And this was great, because the day I was supposed to go, it was a crazy ice storm here. Every other county's courts were closed except for mine. So I had to drive to this place in an ice storm. Oh, I slipped going down my stairs, going out to my car, so I had to go back upstairs and change my pants. And I had to drive really slowly to the courthouse in an ice storm. Then I had to park super far away because the roads were not, like, plowed. So I had to then trudge to the courthouse in an ice storm. So I get there, I'm soaking wet. And I sit there. We sit there for a good solid 2 hours, and someone comes out and says, I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, like, how the fuck am I going to get out of this? Like, can I just tell them, like, I work at night and this is, like, really a huge pain in the ass? But then we were told that, like, oh, well, there's really two cases. We're using this one pool for two cases. And I'm like, fuck, that leaves, like, two people they don't need. Like, forget it. Some guy's going to go in there and shout niggers, and then he's going to get out of it. And that's... So we waited, I think, another, like, 2 hours. And then someone came out and said, like, oh, we're going to start calling you back really soon. And I'm like, God damn, it's been, like, 4 hours. And then another hour goes by, and someone comes out and says, both cases settled, everyone go home. I'm like, fuck you guys, fuck everything, I hate this fucking system. And the biggest problem is, like, as I said, I worked at night, like 12, 13 hours a night. And as I said earlier in the podcast, I mean, I really only slept like 4 or 5 hours at a time. Like, my schedule is really precarious, and, like, the slight disturbance would send me insane for a couple of days. It would really fuck me up. And so, like, doing anything from, like, getting my oil changed or going to, like, the eye doctor, like, really just messed up my rhythm, messed up. I was just cranky. I would be cranky for days because it would really screw me up that bad. Imagine, like, all your appointments had to be scheduled for, like, 3 o'clock in the morning forever, and that was basically my life. That's why that's so frustrating. So, yeah, I mean, it really felt inconvenienced working at night, being bugged 3 years in a row, having to sit there for 5 hours soaking wet, and then not being selected anyway, so... That was that.
That was sounds me. Awful.
It was pretty awful.
Yeah, it sounds really bad. I've never been selected, so I hope
you've never been selected?
I never have, no.
Wow. All right. You're lucky. I've been selected, I think, 3 times.
Jesus. We're less than 30. How are we being selected? I know people are 60, and they're like, I've never been selected. Well, fuck you, Grandma.
I think the first time I was selected, I was young. I was probably like 18 or 19.
So you just did. I was like, they got you. Bam, look at this fresh meat. We got him.
Yeah, I was only working part-time then, so I like went ahead and went down to the courthouse because I would have had time. So I went down. I had to get there like 7 in the morning or something stupid, which, you know, I hated. I brought my GBA with me. I mean, there's no call-in system ahead of time for here in San Diego, at least.
Oh, really? Like, so that phone call thing I was talking about for Connecticut, that doesn't exist?
Yeah, no. I mean, I assume it's a big enough city where they just assume that they're going to, like, need as many people to show up as possible.
Jesus.
Like, the only thing that you could call in for is to change your date. But that's it. So I went down there. I pulled out my GBA and I just sat in the waiting room just playing, I think it was WarioWare the entire time. And then at lunch, like, one of the dudes came out and was like, all right, we have everybody we need. Everybody could go home. So I was like, sweet. And that was it for that time. The other 2 times I've been selected have been somewhat more recently. I've been working full time, but I'm paid hourly. I'm not paid when I'm not there. And they like say to make sure you have could take like up to 5 days off or whatever. I can't. If I take 5 days off, I'm not. That's a lot of money. I'm not seeing.
Crazy. Like, most people can't do that. Most people live fucking right. Hand to mouth. Like, are they? Like, it's crazy. I love the concept of like a jury of your peers. That's really a great concept. It doesn't work so well in practice sometimes, though, for like the average person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, the other 2 times, there's a financial hardship section you could fill out on the form that they mail you. I've just selected that, and they usually don't bug me afterwards.
Mm. No, there's no such section.
So, you know, so I guess, I mean, I'm not even that bug bite. I just literally can't do it. I won't. There's a lot of money that I won't be seeing. I mean, they pay you like what, $5 a day, and then like some trolley fare as well. Yeah. That's what you get here. So
trolley fare.
Yeah, they give you a trolley ticket that's good for like the week, and that's all you get here. So that's not gonna pay my bills or anything. So I just haven't been able to do it the other two times.
Oh no, I worked at night, so I could totally do jury duty and work.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Yuck.
Daniel says, hey guys, have you ever heard of the IQ 3DS? Apparently Nintendo has continued releasing their products under the IQ trademark. And he provides a link. And all the best. Thanks for the show. Yeah, Nintendo's released some products in China under the IQ name with some changes. Like the IQ, like the original IQ was an N64, but you could only like download games and stuff. And it's Sunday, so I can hear people screaming through my walls. We're going to have to put up with this for a little while.
It was just the controller, wasn't it?
It was just the controller.
Yeah.
And like everything was right in the controller, just plug it in your TV.
Well, I think there was like cards that you could like insert into the controller. You can download things. And then like stations and stuff. Or, like malls or something, I suppose. I think that's how that worked. Yeah, I vaguely heard of the IQ 3DS.
I've heard of their other IQ products, not the IQ 3DS. I'm looking at the link. It just looks exactly like a 3DS.
Yeah, but it's probably all download only. It's probably no physical media.
Probably.
Mm. China's nuts. I'd be scared to like release a product in China.
That's why you gotta make your shit look like it's bootleg in order to sell it.
I've heard of it. That's about it. I don't know much about it other than the fact that it exists in China and that it was just an N64 controller, but after that first one, I don't know much about the IQ.
Boom boom.
Michael says, we already heard from Michael back in July, I think. And he says, I was worried another comment. just wanted to know what you guys think of Ace Attorney 5 getting an M rating. Assuming you haven't talked about it, and we haven't. It won't stop me from getting the game, because I'm a huge fan of the series, but it seems somewhat out of place for a generally lighthearted series. I'm just hoping it doesn't make an attempt to be edgy or something, because you know how that ends up. It could be interesting. I don't really have too much of an opinion on it. It could be interesting. It's probably something really benign, though, that got its M rating.
I mean, I remember there's like a lot of blood in some of the DS scenes, particularly in the first one, I think. It might just be the switch to 3D that makes it more realistic,
that could be
gory or bloody or something. I don't know. I'm sure it's still the same lighthearted Phoenix Heart silly shit that goes on in between. I mean, really, the game is always like full of those contrasts. There's always like a murder or something awful going on, and then you know, you get Phoenix and shit just goofing off in between, and then stuff usually gets really serious towards the end, and then it ends, and you're like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Yeah, I heard about when I first heard about this, I was like, huh, that's kind of surprising, but I never really thought of it much beyond that. I mean, I figure it's probably, like you said, maybe there's a little more blood or something, or you know, more thematically heavy case or something, but I figure it's probably not that much different from, like, Zelda switching from E to T. I mean, Ace Attorney previously had been a T rating, so it's not like it's going from, you know, being a game for everyone to getting an M rating, so I still think it'll be pretty good, so I don't think it'll change too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm, I went on the ESRB's website to see if I could like if it's on there yet, but it is not, so I cannot see why it hasn't.
All right, Garrett says, "Hey guys, recently got the game Operation Flashpoint Red River, which is a tactical FPS." And nothing against Garrett; this is not a judgment, but I read names like that and I almost fall asleep. And I got it to play the co-op campaign with my buddy. What I find disturbing about the game is its realism, not in the way that I kill people in the game, the dialogue of the characters. They tell you to do good in the battlefield or else you might get left out of the invasion of some defenseless third world country. They talk about the Tajikistanis like they're subhuman and they deserve to die, and this really turned me off and sort of made me angry. I used to glorify military and guns and whatnot, but I guess I've sort of grown up. Do you guys get sort of uncomfortable playing these types of games from some of these or same or similar reasons? And I know that Seth and I have talked about this, and absolutely, like Call of Duty is like a fucking cartoon, but like there is that realism and that sort of like modern feeling, and I don't. it rubs me the wrong way. I don't like it.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before, but I just don't even like the concept of like making games out of realistic wars. Even if you make the games arcadey or whatever, I think that's just, you know, I think it's in bad taste, really.
Kind of. It's weird because I almost feel like it's exploitative of the military, but a lot of military people play it, so yep. I don't...
Yeah.
You know, so it's really hard to make that argument. It's like when a lot of people in the military play it, so... I mean, but that's not to say it couldn't still be exploitative. It could still be exploitative, and the people you're exploiting love it, but I don't know. But I mean, I'm not a really, like, you know, as Garrett says here, he used to glorify the military and guns, and I'm not in a position where, like, I find guns attractive. I don't. And the military, I mean, we've talked about this before. I think the military's, you know, that's a fine profession to be in. I don't really hold it up on the kind of pedestal a lot of the country does, though, either. That part of that's probably biased, though, because I live in a Navy town, and a lot of, like, the young, like, sailors are, like, assholes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Chris used to live around here, too.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So,
I mean, yep, they are. I mean, this is also a big Navy town, so yeah.
Is it? Okay. And, I mean, I hate to print, but I'm sure there are some fine young sailors, and the officers are actually usually pretty respectful out in public, but a lot of, like, the younger dudes, like, the 18-year-olds who just, like, moved here and, like, they just joined the military, a lot of them are dicks. So I have to say maybe I'm a little biased, not necessarily against the military, but it does color my perception a little bit. But nah, these games don't do anything for me. What about you, Chris? You have any thoughts on that?
No, I totally agree with what you guys are saying. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of first-person shooters anyway, but if I were to play one, I don't want to play something that's, you know, that based in reality. Mm. It just makes me uncomfortable.
I generally don't play things based in reality at all. And not because, like, I hate the argument that, like, if I could do it in real life, why would I do it in the game? Dude, shut up. But why do people play Uno? Why do people play Uno on Xbox Live Arcade? Like, you can do that in real life. But, but a lot of games, I don't generally play a lot. I don't play, like, sports games. That doesn't interest me. Like, I guess I don't mind that they exist. I'm sure I know that there's an audience for those things. But generally speaking, I guess I just don't I don't play a lot of, like, realistic-ish games in general, regardless of the genre. Matt says, what do you guys do to avoid scratching the touchscreens on your 3DSs and Wii U controllers? I don't scratch them. I wish I had a more complex answer, because I don't put anything on them. I own, like, four 3DSs, four DSs. I own the Wii U. Nothing's scratched on any of them.
If I'm going to play, like, a touchscreen heavy game, I make sure, like, the screen is clean. Because, I mean, a lot, it's not the stylus scratching the screen. The stylus is, like, just making contact with, like, dirt or dust and debris and stuff. And then, you know, it just slides around the screen and scratches. So I just make sure that the screen is clean and I don't press down very hard, I guess.
Yeah, me neither. After using these things for years, you sort of learn where the resistive touchscreen, like, where the pressure point is on that. And then that's all you press. It's just to meet that.
But, I mean, if you're worried about it, just get a screen protector or something. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like them. I don't like screen protectors. I don't like cases. Like, all my... I've had an iPhone since they came out. I've all used is iPhones. I don't put cases on them. I don't do none of that. I don't like show my stuff.
Yeah, I used to use screen protectors on my DS. My very first DS, I think, probably because I hadn't used a lot of touchscreen games and stuff, I did end up with some scratches on there. So after that, I did use screen protectors, but they ended up being more trouble than they're worth. I mean, I end up getting bubbles under the screen or something. So I feel like, you know, if you're just conscious of what you're doing, you can avoid scratching it pretty easily.
Yeah,
I think my original DS is just scratched to hell from Elite Beat Agents and what was that other game? Feel the Magic. Especially that last level. Oh yeah, if you're gonna play like a game like that, I get a screen protector, I think.
I have both those games, and I haven't scratched any DSs, though.
I mean, not even a little. It's not, like, really. Usually when they start making you, like, do crazy, super fast circles.
Yeah, circles are a big one. I do know. But they, I mean, I get, like, scuffs that, like, sort of wipe away, but I've never had scratches, though.
Yeah, I definitely, my first DS is definitely scratched to hell from, I'm pretty sure, just Elite Beat Agents.
Ryan J. asks, are any of you interested in the new action button entertainment game for PlayStation Mobile 10x8? Anything Tim Rogers does tends to have my attention, but I don't have a Vita yet. No, I looked at it and read the description, and it just didn't seem interesting to me. But
who's Tim Rogers?
I mean, he's written stuff He does writing. He's been on Kotaku. Like, if you've seen, like, an article by a freelancer on Kotaku that's, like, 500 million words, it's usually Tim Rogers.
All right.
And he's very divisive. People don't like what he has to say. I do. I would say, like, 8 times out of 10 I agree with him, and the other 2 times I don't agree with him, but I'm still interested in what he has to say because he's pretty smart and observant, and I like that. But he also makes games now. He's an Action Button Entertainment here. And he did Ziggurat on iOS, which actually, you know, for the dude who's asked my iOS game, Ziggurat's actually really good. I love Ziggurat. But I like Ziggurat, but I really don't have much interest in 10x8.
I haven't seen it, so I can't say.
Yeah, I hadn't even heard of this.
It's a puzzle game. It doesn't look for me. Mason asked, Craig, what's your favorite song off of We the Common? Mine would definitely have to be Holy Roller. Yeah, mine's either Holy Roller or We the Common, myself. Tokyo Teddy says, Craig, I've listened to you for many years. I think I have info you need. Pardon my grammar. I am texting this message. That is dedication. I appreciate that, Tokyo Teddy. And he gives me some advice here on how to move to Japan, which is pretty rad, and I will look into that. Getting a working holiday visa. I've never even heard of that. And he's just like, basically go there and then get a job when you're there, which seems really reckless to me, which seems I have nowhere to stay. I'm like, can you just give me a job? I have no residence. Can I have a job? Yeah, I know that. But no, I really appreciate the advice. Level 1 of the JLPT. Well, that's okay. That's actually, come to think, I am not level 1 JLPT. So no, that probably won't work. I am not level 1, not even close.
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Are you an RPG, Craig?
Yeah. Japanese language proficiency test. It's a standardized test. Yet Japan actually has a standardized test for their language. And there used to be 4 levels. You start at 4, and then you can work your way up to 1. Now there's 5. Now you start at 5. And I am not 1. That's not... Basically, 1 is like, I am super fluent and I can conduct business, like, super easily in Japanese. And so, obviously, like, that's desired.
Gotta level up, Craig.
Clock Blockers says, so my headphones broke on the right side, making them only pick up sound from the left side. Craig's voice is the sound that comes through the left, while Seth and Chris come from the right. It all sounded like Craig was talking to himself. I don't know how to fix that. That's Skype in conjunction with the application that I use to record. I'm not really hipping with on how to fix that. But you should fix your headphones. That sounds fixable. You should do that.
I remember back when I used to listen to episodes way back in the day. I don't know why. It's not like I was going to like give myself any input and go, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong here? What can I work on? No, I don't know. I was just like, oh, so that's how I sound talking like an idiot. But yeah, and notice that, like, a long ass time ago, I was like, that is really weird. Is Craig doing some, like, Beatles mixed from mono into stereo shit going on, and the sound's all wonky, or... But...
I'm not 100% sure why it does that.
It's just a thing, huh?
Yeah, just a thing, yeah. I don't really understand it. Yeah. And I'm gonna tell you, I'm not gonna investigate, I don't care. I'm not gonna even try to fix that.
I think you've already demonstrated your dedication to the podcast in the opening comments, Craig.
I have tried to, like, mess with it, but I guess I just don't understand it.
Depending on what device he's using, I mean, you might be able to change that in his own settings. I mean, true. I have my iPhone set to mono because most of what I listen to is podcasts, so it doesn't matter what I'm hearing in each ear. But that way, when I'm at work, sometimes I'll have, like, one earbud in so I can still hear people talking. And that way you hear everything. So, might want to look into that.
There you go. That's awesome advice. Mono.
Onizia says, just wanted to pop in. It's been a while, and say that the podcast is still just as great as ever. She said this on August 11th, so I don't... Was she listening to another podcast in the past 2 weeks?
Maybe she was catching up on older episodes. This is probably the last we ever hear of her.
You make going to work much more entertaining. I have an extremely long commute. Well, I'm glad we can do that.
We're so sorry.
She says, I just rented a condo and got to discover how much fun it is to pack up and move a video game collection. I'm dreading that because my apartment's really super expensive. It's like $1,300 a month to like live here. And I live by myself now, so I don't think I'll be able to afford that once my lease is up. Like early next year. So I'm not looking forward to packing up my video game collection. She says, I'm not looking forward to doing this ever again. It's great to have an entire room dedicated to gaming, but putting up bookshelves and reorganizing everything was a pure nightmare. The Atari 5200 doesn't fit anywhere. That box is huge. I know Craig had to redo his gaming room, so really, kudos, you have even more games. But I didn't really have to move them. So you had to do way more work. Really, I think on my end, it was work, but it was fun work. You had to move shit. That sounds terrible. I'm sorry.
I've had to move my game collection once. It wasn't that bad, but it was smaller than it is now by a good deal. I did, like, end up breaking a GameCube controller during the move, and possibly my Xbox, I don't know. I haven't played that thing in, like, 5 years, so I don't know. yeah, it sucks. It sucks, and I don't want to have to move all this other crap either when I move again.
Games of War says, sup guys, I'm about
15 hours, maybe?
I want to say 15 hours. 15 hours into Tales of Zillia, and I'm really enjoying the game very much. In fact, next to Lunar 1 and 2 on Sega CD, the Tales of series is my favorite RPG series of all time. My question to you fine gentlemen is this. Do you enjoy the Tales games? Which of you have you played, and what are your top 5 games in the series? Mine are number 1, Vesperia, Graces F, Destiny, The Abyss, and Legendia. Thanks, guys, and happy gaming. I do like the Tales series. I used to think of the series as hit or miss, because there are some duds, and generally speaking, those duds actually don't come out to America. But there are some, I don't even want to say duds, just ones that aren't as good as the others, so it does seem very uneven. But
I think there's a DS one that came out in Japan that's really bad.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that came out in Japan, and the DS ones, and they're alright. Man, these people are shy. Football is not that cool!
We don't hear them, Craig. You sound like you're insane.
I am insane, but it's very clearly independent of these guys watching football. How do you yell at the TV? Why do you do that? How is it socially acceptable? If I was yelling at the TV playing video games, people would think I was bananas.
Craig, if you don't yell at the TV, how are the players going to hear you?
Clock blockers are just going to think he's yelling at us because he can't hear us. Sorry we're talking about football, Craig.
Oh, God. It's just everywhere. But, I actually think that the Tales games are actually fairly consistent when you weed out the few that are, like, not so hot. I think there's more quality in them than there is not quality. I would say Symphonia, Vesperia, and I would say Zillia is up there for me. I've actually really been enjoying Zillia, so those are among my favorites.
I'm not huge on them. I find the parts of the game that aren't the combat are really, like, low budget and sloppy looking. Like, just, like, basic conversations between characters. Everybody just moves unnaturally and looks stupid when they turn around and things like it just bugs me. It's like, why is the animation?
Yeah.
And why is the in-game cutscene animation so goddamn amateur
there's
looking.
A lot of stock animations, and particularly I noticed this a lot in Grace's F that, like, each character had, like, 3 animations, so, like, they would just repeat those over and over again while
it's that kind of stuff that just drives me crazy about the series.
I think Zillia in particular is really, like, a milestone in terms of presentation for the series. It's a lot better than most of them. They might still do that in the game, and I'm just used to the Tales games doing that, and I'm not really picking up on it. So I don't want to say that they don't have those weird things, but I think it's been a lot better. I don't really notice. I noticed it in Grace's F, which is the previous one. And so, like, it was in Grace's F, but I'm not really catching on to the canned animations as much in Zillia. So I think that they really did put a better foot forward. And 8-4 did the translation. 8-4 did the translation for Grace's F as well, but they really outdid themselves with Zillia. Like, the characterizations and the voice acting are actually pretty respectable. I normally hate these things, but they did a pretty decent job for the localization for Zillia. I mean, I don't know if it's still full price. I want to say, go out and buy the 60, take this chance on a $60 game, but, you know, if you want to give the Tales games another chance, I mean, Zillia might be the one for you.
All right.
They don't have overworlds anymore, though.
Oh.
They're not hallway linear, but really, like, each area is, like, each major town or major dungeon area is, like, interconnected by, like, area, like, I don't know how to explain it. They're outdoor areas, they're like forests and stuff, but like they have only like one or two like exit points. Am I making sense?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that how like Final Fantasy X is?
Kind of. Actually, it's a lot like Final Fantasy X. That's good. Yeah, that's a good comparison. Yep.
Yeah, because I don't remember an overworld in that. But it's not like Tales of Symphonia 2, where, like, you just select shit on a map.
No, not I mean, not in Grace's F or in Zillia, no.
Okay.
And it's not a straight hallway like 13 either. Vesperia, I think, was the last one with, like, an actual overworld. So, I just want to, I mean, people play them and they're like, when do I hit the overworld? Like, you don't. You just, you know, follow these roads and go through these countrysides and that's how
it is. I mean, that's fine. I honestly prefer that in, like, I think maybe because Earthbound's the first RPG I played, there's not really an overworld in that. You just walk down past to the next town and stuff.
Right.
And I think I definitely prefer that. As far as the games I've played, I've played Symphonia, Symphonia 2, and Vesperia. I think those are the only ones I've played. I hated the second Symphonia game so much, I thought it was just god-awful.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like that, but I haven't played that one.
The first Symphonia was alright, it's like very cliched, as far as story goes, and there are a couple parts where...
Like, it's so weird. That game, like, there's a tree, and then there's angels, and I'm like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, I mean, and then there's, like, a part, I think you get on, like, some sort of time-traveling motorcycle bike. It's not time-traveling, world-traveling. Travel to a different dimension of the world. I don't know. I don't know. The game was weird.
It was super weird.
And I was actually liking Vesperia a good deal, but I didn't stick with it. I didn't play in very far, but I thought it was better than Symphonia. Definitely better one. Than...
Yeah,
better,
I liked,
definitely better than Symphonia.
I liked Grace's F. I thought that one was pretty... It took a while for me to warm up to it, though. But I liked it. Zillia, though, I think I enjoyed from the get-go. I actually really liked that game. And I like how, like, the combat's pretty much the same in all the games. Like, that sounds like it's a knock, but the combat's so well done that you don't really need to do a lot to it. And so, like, each game these days has, like, its own little, like, spice. So it's, like, basically the same, but, like, in Zillia, like, you can link to an AI teammate. So, like, they'll cover your back, and then you have access to, like, special arts while you're linked to that particular person. So they'll do something, like, small like that to change. But basically speaking, if you've played one, you have a general idea of how they all work.
So. Yep. I mean, the combat's definitely probably one of the best aspects of the series.
Absolutely, yeah. What about you, Chris? You play any of them?
I played Symphonia on the GameCube. I seem to remember enjoying it, but it's been a long time since I played that. But that's the only one I've ever played. I wanted to check out Tales of the Abyss. That's the one on 3DS, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a PS2
and,
port.
Right. For some reason, I couldn't find it at the time when it came out. I don't know if, you know, some source didn't have it. Yeah, I think I remember hearing about that. But so for some reason, I never picked it up. But I would like to check that out, because I think being on a handheld, it's more likely that I'll get into it.
Mm.
So hopefully I'll go back and pick that up at some point.
Whew, there's a lot of questions here. Holy shit.
Are there still more?
Yeah, there's more. We got plenty more. Like, we got a whole bunch. We got like six more. Mary Dukes, will you guys ever have an indie developer on this podcast? Thanks and have an awesome day. That would be cool. I feel like, you know, even though we've done like 120 some odd episodes, I still feel like this is like... And I think it's a good podcast. Like, this is not a knock against me or you guys. I still feel like it's very amateurish. And having an indie developer on would be almost like a very professional thing to do. So, can you tell us about the systems? And like, no. Like, we make fart jokes. Like, I don't... That seems really out of place.
I know somebody who works at WaveForward and somebody who works at Harmonix, but I don't think either of them could talk about anything.
No, they can't. Yeah, no. No.
Maybe, like, past stuff that they've done, that they've worked on?
Pretty much. But, I mean, those aren't really, like, indie developers. I mean, I guess maybe... Well, actually, are they both independent? They are kind of both independent.
I think they are. Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe you're thinking more along the lines of someone like Jules Watson or something, but...
Yeah, I don't have the context for that at all. Craig might.
I could,
Jules Watson's boyfriend.
I do talk to a lot of indie developers, and, like, I could...
I feel like I would be embarrassed for this podcast, like, for us recording, if we had an indie developer on here.
I kind of feel like, hold on a second, like, my 20-year-old MacBook's glitching. Oh, okay, Skype's working. Okay, let's do this.
Yeah, like, maybe if we, like, brought him in just for, like, one segment real fast, and, like, and then they would never know, like, it's amateur hour over here.
Right.
I'd just be worried they're going to be like, oh, well, let me check out some of your old episodes before I get prepared. But like, no, don't do that.
Oh, there was a server fire. All our episodes were lost. Sorry.
Oh, man. Clockblockers asked, did the podcast disband because you guys got into a fight about Craig disliking Looney Tunes?
Absolutely, yes. That was the main reason. Craig has since apologized and has admitted to the glory of Looney Tunes, and that's why we're back recording again.
I can't stand Looney Tunes.
He's bought himself, like, Looney Tunes t-shirt and a whole dinnerware set, actually. So,
dinnerware set?
He is into it now.
I'm a single dude. Well, I guess I'm not. I have a girlfriend, but I live by my... I'm a dude who lives by himself. Like, I don't have any...
That sounds exactly like the person who would have a Looney Tunes dinnerware set.
I don't even have food here. Like, I have, like, 2 gallons of orange juice right now.
Open that Looney Tunes dinner set.
Yeah, you gotta drink it out of something. He pours it in glasses and bowls. That's something she just... Like, oh, I got his juice. I'm going to pour it in my Looney Tunes bowl.
I drink my hot beverages out of my TARDIS mug and my cold beverages out of my Ghostbusters tumbler. There's no room for Looney Tunes.
Well, it sounds like you can make some room.
Tyler says, hey, guys, love the show. Here's a quick question for you. I was wondering if any of you guys play trading card games or tabletop RPGs. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
Nah, that shit's for nerds.
Nope, not really. I mean, the closest I come is, like, I occasionally play, like, Catan, but that's about it.
And Craig collects fucking stupid-ass trading card game shit and doesn't do anything with it.
I sold some of my high-value Magic cards and bought some games. I had some Magic cards, I don't know, so...
Like, honestly, I'm too stupid for that shit. I mean, like, I can't pay attention long enough in order to learn all the rules for this stuff. So I tried learning Magic once. Somebody was trying to teach me, and they were, first of all, an awful teacher, because they were just, like, fucking making shit up as they went. I'm like, oh, and I could do this. Well, why didn't you tell me that from the beginning? I could have done that earlier, but no.
Magic's really not that difficult. The thing with Magic that I found hard to grasp is that there are, like, there's, like, conditions that can happen. And when the condition's first introduced, like, each card will describe the condition. It'll say, like, this effect happens. But then, like in the next set, it'll give it a name. And so, like, there's Trample. And so you're like, what does Trample do? Like, if you've been playing all along, you know what Trample does, because in the previous set, it had a name, but it also flat-out spelled what Trample was. But then, mm-hmm. later on, it'll just be, like, Trample, and you're like... Should I just be playing this since, like, 1996 or what? Because this is just too much for me to absorb all at once.
Yeah, let's put it this way. I need crazy eights explained to me every time before I play. I can't learn a trading card game.
Chris?
No, I don't play any of them.
No Pokemon?
no Pokemans.
Nathan says, hey guys, just wondering what you're most looking forward to from now through the end of the year. All I can say is it's a great time to be a Nintendo fan, but November 22nd sees the release of Zelda, Mario, Mario Party, and the Xbox One. Does it seem a little odd to anyone else? It seems a little odd that Nintendo's releasing 3 games on that day, but...
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that. Keep up the awesome. Also glad you decided to record again. Finally, thanks. I don't know what I'm most looking forward to. Maybe a Link Between Worlds? Mario 3D World? I think that's what I'm most looking forward to, but I'm not really sure. There's so much shouting going on over here, it's insane.
I think I actually heard it that time. It sounded like
I did too.
An angry cat or something.
What about you guys? What are you guys looking forward to?
Hey, Chris.
I'm looking forward to Zelda and Ace Attorney 5, if that is still coming out this fall. I don't think we've heard too much lately.
It's good.
I'm just looking at what I have pre-ordered on Amazon, Ease, Memories of Salsetta, The Wonderful 101, Sonic Lost World. Those are all shit. Why is that even still there? And that's it, I guess.
Maybe. I think I have a lot more. I haven't pre-ordered them yet, but they're like in my wish list. I mean, my Amazon wish list. I'll just rattle this off real quick. Ratchet and Clank, Into the Nexus, Fable Anniversary, Mario Party 3DS, Ease... Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, Wind Waker HD, Mario 3D World, Link Between Worlds, Sonic Lost World 3DS and Wii U, Hometown Story, Adventure Time Explore the Dungeon because I don't know, Pokemon X and Rune Factory 4.
Why don't I have Donkey Kong pre-ordered? Yeah, what the hell's wrong with me?
Yeah, that's weird, dude.
I think I got mad because they, like, switched its release date with Mario.
Yeah, it went to December.
those assholes. I want Donkey Kong first. I don't care about that Mario game.
Did you guys pre-order Wind Waker to get that statue at GameStop?
Oh, yeah, I do have that pre-ordered at GameStop. Apparently, that thing sold out, and it's already, like, selling for hundreds of dollars on eBay.
Yeah, I missed it because I'm stupid.
Good job,
what
idiot.
What made you sleep on that, man?
I know. I was going to go pick it up. I was going to go pre-order it on Sunday, and then for some reason I was like, I'll just do it tomorrow. And then by the time I was going to go, it's like, oh, it's gone. So I'm hoping that they'll have another batch appear on the website, or, you know, they'll have a couple in store or something. But this just gives me an excuse to buy the digital one early, so I can play it before you guys.
I might buy the digital one early and then keep my physical one sealed.
Yeah, I figure I might buy the digital one early and then just buy the physical one once it's cheaper. I don't know. I'm still deciding. We'll see. But no, I do not have the statue one pre-ordered.
You say that like that physical
pre-ordered.
One's gonna be cheaper.
No, I mean, I just mean the regular physical one. Even eventually.
That, well, I mean, when's that gonna go cheaper?
Yeah, that's a Nintendo.
It doesn't matter. I'll be able to play it until then.
I guess.
It takes 4 or 5 years. I'm just
gonna buy Wind Waker HD in 10 years.
When it's $45.
Hey, Twilight Princess only took, what, 5 years to get cheaper?
I like Nintendo just had, like, an announcement where they're like, oh, these games are now $30. It was like
Mario
Galaxy 2 and shit. And they're like, $30? Whoa, don't go crazy, Nintendo, with that price cut. I mean, I remember when they used to drop their N64 games down to, like, 20 when they would hit their player's choice.
N64 games were 40 on players.
Yeah, they were 40.
Were they 40?
Dick. Yeah.
Jeez.
Trying to do that on a paper route, man. Like, you're praying for, like, a player's choice game, and then, like, you had to save up for, like, weeks. Fuck, dude. That sucked.
I'm way off on that one. I got a lot of N64 games, like, later, though, from stores like Target and Walmart, which seem to sell them a lot cheaper than places like GameStop.
I bought most of mine at Walmart, too, but, I mean, the games are, like, usually between, they were, like $60, $70.
$60 was the most I ever paid for one, and that was for Donkey Kong 64. Actually, I think maybe $65 for Donkey Kong 64.
Really weird pricing, and then they would go Player's Choice, and they'd be, like, $40, and you're like, ugh, it's still so much money.
Mm-hmm.
Games are, like, they were stupid expensive. Let's see here. And then Clock Blocker says, David Wise is working on the new Donkey Kong Country soundtrack. Indeed he is.
Yep.
With a smiley face there. And then Nick Knack, to round this off, says, hey guys, I see that a new episode of the podcast is finally made after how long? About 2 months. I'll try to have this up tomorrow. Today's Sunday, the 8th. I will try to have this up tomorrow, the 9th. I don't have a job, so I'm pretty sure I can do that. Anyway, you guys seem to be okay with answering your non-video game-related questions, so here's one for you guys. On a scale of 0 through negative 100, with 0 being tolerable and negative 100 being I'd rather snort a line of broken glass rather than watch that again, I'll discuss it with you guys with Miley Cyrus's VMA performance. Keep up the good work. Thanks for answering my Spurs versus Heat question after how fucking long ago. For a second I thought you guys were going to blackball it. I think we tried to answer that.
I think that's one where we were proud of ourselves for, like, figuring out what city these teams were from.
I don't concern myself too much with celebrity news. I don't really have a strong opinion on Miley Cyrus's VMA performance. I think that she was trying to be attractive in a way that I don't find attractive. I don't know what was up with the, like, her tongue hanging out like she was a dog in a really hot car. Really, really honestly, the whole performance is just not to my taste. But other than commenting on that, like, I just don't care. I don't really have an opinion.
Somebody dragged me into watching this. Hey, you gotta see this stupid thing.
I was watching Breaking Bad. Like, I was busy. Like, why the fuck would I be watching VMAs?
Yeah. I don't know, like 30 seconds of it, then I just, like, stopped watching. I walked away because I was like, okay, that's stupid, bye. So, I don't know. It was dumb.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't find this appealing, but at the same time, like, I just don't get, like, there was a really huge reaction to it, and it's sometimes I wonder if, like, people, like, think of, like, celebrities as, like, their friends, but, not consciously, but, like, because celebrities are so out in the open that, like, we talk about them so much. Like a collective we, not really us, but like oh my God, did you see how Kanye got up on the stage on poor Taylor Swift? Isn't that awful? I'm like, yeah, it's sort of a dick move, but I really don't care. Like, this has no impact on my life. I don't care. This has nothing.
But it had memes that came. That's the impact.
The memes are probably the best part of that.
Yeah, I was fine with the Kanye thing because hold on, I'm going to let you finish. Was awesome. That was good stuff.
That was good. But no, I really don't concern myself with that stuff a whole lot personally.
I thought it was pretty gross, but whatever.
Yeah.
Celebrities do a lot of gross things. So.
And normally I wouldn't comment. Like, I don't care. Like, she can wear whatever and stick her tongue out. Like, I wouldn't comment on the attractiveness of that, but, like, she's obviously trying to do it to, like, seem, I don't know, sexual or something, and it's...
Was that supposed to be sexy? Because that was the opposite of sexy.
Well, when she's grinding up on Beetlejuice...
I thought she was trying to do it to be, like, outrageous. I don't, like, necessarily
maybe.
Know
yeah.
about sex.
But... Well, I think the sexiness was the outrageous. I don't know. Now we're discussing
well,
it.
Then,
I really don't
know. I mean, if that's a thing, then she missed her mark.
I think it missed the mark on whatever. I guess it was outrageous, but if it was trying to be sexy, I don't think it succeeded.
They got everyone right? talking.
That's true.
I read articles like, where's her father? And I'm like, she's a grown-ass adult. Like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Her father's swimming in his country music money someplace.
And that's it. That's all the input we have, which is a lot. So again, tvlist.net, click on the mailbag, shoot us something. Sign up is painless, and you won't get any spam. So, let's talk about some games we've been playing. I have to go to the loo, so I think Seth should start us off because he's going to talk about games that I did not enjoy anyway. So I will let him talk about the games he enjoyed and express his enjoyment without my interruption.
So you just wanted to talk about Killer's Dead?
That game fucking sucks.
Well, I thought we weren't going to be interrupted by you, Craig. You just really take this in the bathroom. Alright, I played some Killer's Dead. It's...
I heard it sucks. That's just what I heard. Somewhere.
Yeah, somebody may have...
Yeah, I don't know. In the bathroom. It's in my memory somewhere.
Yeah. It's a new Grasshopper manufacturer game. It's a... Stylistically, it's sort of reminiscent of Killer 7. Just a lot more shiny and maybe with even weirder shadows. It's a third person, you know, beat 'em up, run through hallways to your end goal. It's very structured, like No More Heroes. I think the difference is though that the battle system is a lot more fleshed out than in something like No More Heroes. You got your standard attack, and then you have like a guard breaker attack, and then you have a dodge, and you have a block. But with the dodge and the block, what you could do is called a just dodge and a just block, where you wait till the very last moment. And if you do a just dodge in a certain direction, you could do a counterattack right afterwards. And it's sort of really awesome with the main dude, Mondo's katana just slicing like crazy through whoever you're fighting. And then if you do a just block, usually the enemy gets into a state of hit stun, where you could just wail on them for a while without any worries. As you beat up enemies, you fill up a blood meter on your sword, and that makes you more powerful, but it also powers up your secondary weapons that you have. You have a gun arm, you get like a drill arm, and an ice gun. I think that's everything I've gotten so far. I don't really use those that much. The gun arm and the drill specifically seem to mostly be for like solving puzzles in the environment. They're optional puzzles. Like, they open up hidden areas where you could collect more whatever, more money or whatever, so you can buy more crap within the game, which is another thing. You could power up a lot of your moves and buy new moves by collecting money from defeated enemies or hidden in the environment, and then you could like buy stuff like an upward slash, or you could power up your dodge or stuff like that. The environments in this game are I'm going to spoil the first two fucking real levels in this game because it's just great. Like, the first real level that you get to, because there's like some boring like scripted stuff in the beginning. First real level you get to is like an Alice in Wonderland inspired level with just like, you know, stairs on the ceiling and all this stuff, like an Escher painting or something, and like a garden and all this other stuff. And it's just really weird and bizarre, and it's really fun to play through. And then the next level takes place in a mansion on the moon.
What? And
exactly, exactly. That's sort of the stuff that's going on. Let me just give you a... You're just an assassin. You take on different jobs from different people, and they could be just whatever. So you just sort of go globetrotting around this world, taking on different missions. But it seems like they're all tying into something eventually. I haven't beaten the game yet. The down point of the game are the Gigolo missions, which, you know, a lot of people have talked about as being shitty for their concept. Like, I'm not even bothered by the concept of the Gigolo missions. It's a Grasshopper makes stupid-ass shit, and this is obviously, like, some sort of, like, James Bond wannabe stuff. The gameplay in these Gigolo missions is stupid and boring, though. Basically, you're sitting with a woman, and if she's looking at you, you don't want to look at her, I guess. You want to look away. It takes place in a first-person view. And then when she's not looking at you, you, like, want to check out her tits or her legs or something. And
actually,
that
when she's
feels
looking at you, you want to look at her face. You get points for that.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure it said to look away from her when she's looking at you.
No, zoom in on her face. You get points.
Really?
Yeah.
Then I'm doing that wrong. Whatever. Well, anyways.
I think it's you want to make eye contact when she's looking at you and then look at her tits or thighs when she's looking away.
And then I read half of that wrong. Anyways, that fills up a meter. And then once that meter's filled up, you could, like, give her a present or something, and then depending on how much she likes the present, that fills up a different meter. And then once that meter's filled, then you bone her, and she gives you a present. These are optional missions. They're just so stupidly boring. They're optional, but at the same time, they also unlock your secondary weapons. So if you want, like, your drill arm and your ice gun, then you need to you need to pretty much do these if you want to be able to fully explore the real levels in the game. The boss battles are good in this. I think my favorite was against, like, a zombie composer guy, and you fight him while, like, falling down a skyscraper at blinding speed. I think the gameplay itself is good in the levels. Craig's going to disagree with me or something. He is also going to talk about screen tearing, which is definitely a problem in the game. The game has a lot of screen tearing, which isn't one of my biggest pet peeves, but it definitely detracts from the experience.
I feel like for me, like, it's almost like assembling a jigsaw puzzle. Like, my brain has to work, like, overtime to make sense of, like, the broken images I see, which I think is why it's very so frustrating for me. Like, things like frame rate, it's like, well, whatever, it's a little bit slower, but that's why screen tearing bothers me so much. You know, when it's... I mean, I don't like Killer's Dead. I'll talk about it later. You can say what you have to say. But, like, when I'm playing a game that I think is bad or I'm just not enjoying, like, Killer's Dead, and it's their screen tearing, like, forget it. I'm done. You know, I merely tolerate it in better games. And even then, I wish it would fucking die. I hate screen tearing so much.
All right. I love, like, the use of shadows in this game, too. Just... they don't really follow, like, any real structure. There's no, like, real lighting system set up. They just play shadows wherever the hell they want to emphasize just the tone and scene of the different, both the cutscenes and the gameplay. And I think that's done really well. But I don't know. That's all I have to say on the game, basically. So if you want to tear it apart now, Craig, you can.
I haven't played it, but this game sounds pretty cool to me, based on your description. Of course, your description is going to sound good, that being that you enjoy
it. It is, because I'm liking the game.
I think it's terrible. I do. I mean, and I'm not being hyperbolic when I say this. I think it's probably the worst game I've played this year.
Really?
Yeah. It feels like someone trying to emulate Grasshopper, like a fan fiction Grasshopper game rather than an actual Grasshopper game. I mean, the combat is just really boring and tepid. The level design is just dull. Like you were excited describing, like, the Alice in Wonderland and, like, the Mansion on the Moon, and, like, so, like, the backdrops to the levels are cool, but I think the levels themselves are really boring.
I think that's standard for, like, Grasshopper. Like, pretty much everything, like, even Lollipop Chainsaw and No More Heroes, I think, has
a little more. I think Lollipop Chainsaw and Shadows of the Damned were a little more lively. I mean, No More Heroes, yeah, you're probably right. Those levels were pretty simple.
It's, yeah, the No More Heroes, I think it's most similar to No More Heroes, where it's basically, you know, hallways with enemies and going into rooms with enemies and then progressing on from that.
I think in which case it's just a combination of things. I think that's just something that's on the pile. Just combat's really dull, but it's combat's, like, the best part, even though it's, like, really boring, but, like, it's frequently interrupted. The levels themselves are short, and then there's a lot of cutscenes and a lot of talking and a lot of doing stupid stuff. The collision detection is also pretty bad. I mean, it's more easily noticed when, like, you're trying to hit small objects that, like, unlock
items. Like that, the breakable items within
and
the game.
You'll swing and whiff on those, like, five times. You'll be standing, like, right
in front of it. I don't even think it's a collision detection problem. I think it's just the combat's not even, like, set up to be... Because a lot of times, like, your first slash will be high. Mondo will slash high. So it's actually going over these pots. It's, like, not even... programmed properly for you to, like, be hitting these things.
I just think it's most noticeable then. I think it's a little off during combat, too. It's better there because of the, you know, the wires are so big. But mm-hmm. I think even then it's still a little off.
I haven't noticed any collision detection problems within the combat.
I think, like, the screen tearing is a huge problem. I think the writing is atrocious. The writing in this is the worst writing in any Grasshopper. And it's not, you know... You're painting this picture of, like, a weird game, but, like, all Grasshopper games are weird, right? But, like, this is, like, weird without any sort of, like, context or being self-referential or anything like that. And on top of that, it just doesn't give you any, like, reason to care about the characters. Like, not that you need to care about them, but they just sort of talk to each other as if you're supposed to understand what's going on already. And they never really clue you in why you should care about them or what they're doing. Or anything, really. Like, they're really boring, lifeless characters. And so, I mean, that's... I mean, I just don't really find... The only things I find redeemable about the game is the art style. Like you said, the shadows are really cool because the shadows look like you're looking at an LCD TV from the wrong direction.
Yep.
And I think that's... Cool. And it takes a minute to get used to, but I actually really like that. And I like the use of color. I actually really like the art style. And I like the music, too. But that's it. I absolutely loathe everything else. I could throw a rock and hit a better hack and slash. There's just not... I can't stand the game.
Alright. That's fine. I guess. I mean, I'll agree with you with the characters. I think Mondo himself is probably the most boring protagonist in a Grasshopper game. But other than that, I don't know. I'm just really enjoying going through these levels.
That's cool. Have you played anything else?
Yeah, probably. I played through Gargoyle's Quest 1 and 2, the first one on Game Boy and the second one on NES. There's sort of, it's like a weird combination. It's almost like an RPG slash adventure game slash platformer. And by that I mean, like, the traversal is overhead, at least in the first game, in Gargoyle's Quest 1 on Game Boy, the traversal is, like, overhead, and there's, like, random battles that you get into, and then it switches to side screen, sort of like a Zelda 2, switches to a side screen thing, and then you gotta clear out all the enemies, and then you progress on. You don't level up with experience points, though. When you fight enemies on the overworld, you basically just get money, which you can use to buy lives. But then you get to points in the game where it just turns into just straight up side-scrolling action platformer where you're flying or I guess hovering around. You only have a limited meter, hovering around and just making your way through the level to a boss, which you have to fight. You get, like, different stats are your jump, your flight, and your health. Obviously, the flight lets you hover longer. The health gives you more hit points, and the jump makes it so you could jump higher. There's, like, certain areas of the game that you can't get into unless you could jump high enough or glide far enough. And then you also get different fireballs that you could shoot. Like, one of them breaks through, like, certain walls, and then one of them shoots out this gunky stuff that sticks to spiked walls, and then that way you could safely cling up and jump up spiked walls, and then you just get, like, one that's super powerful. But I think it's a really fun game. The level design is really damn good. The progression and sense of exploration is all done really well, and I think it's just really, really a well-balanced game, and I had a lot of fun with it. The second game, though, on NES is, like, the complete opposite of that. The level design... The level design is so poor in the second game. Like, there's so many blind jumps where you can't see where you're going. You basically have to, like, pick away and hope it's right. It's ridiculous. And then there's a lot of enemy types that they don't really have a pattern to learn. It's a lot of randomness. Like, there's these platforms that move back and forth. And, you know, you got, like, time platform jumps or whatever. But these platforms randomly shoot at you. You don't know when they're going to shoot. But when they shoot, they stop, first of all, while they shoot. So you could, like, overshoot a platform or miss a platform easily because you don't know when it's going to stop. And then also you don't know when it's going to shoot, so you might be standing like in a place where you don't need to. And the main character, Firebrand, he's not a particularly quick fellow. He moves kind of slow, so you don't have a lot of time to react. It's just counterintuitive to the way Firebrand can move, that these levels are set up. There's also like levels where these enemies just keep spawning over and over near you while you're trying to do a bunch of other stuff. It's frustrating. I think I died more in the Game Boy game, but when I died, it was my fault. Like, I could see, like, okay, I know what I need to do here. In the NES game, I died less, but they were all extremely frustrating deaths. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? This is stupid. They also took away the random battles in the overworld. There's like enemies that are just standing there that you go up and talk to that you could fight. But they give you like a lot less, I think it's crystals or something, whatever, that you need to buy your health. They give you a lot less crystals, and they're all just, since you have to like go and seek them out, like you find yourself really low on money in order to buy lives, and lives are really damn important in this game. So that's kind of a downgrade as well. And then there's also less arenas. Like when you go and talk to an enemy on the overworld and switch it to side view, in the Game Boy game, there's like probably 5-6 different arenas with a lot of different enemy types. And depending on like how hard the enemy is, you get more crystals. In the NES game, there's one arena and like 3 different enemies that you could fight within it. And they all give you like 3 crystals no matter what. It's just a step back in what they were doing in the first game. And then also the save system in the Game Boy game, it's all password saved. In the Game Boy game, when you get your password and you continue, it keeps track of how many lives and how many vials you have. In the NES game, when you put in that password to continue your game, you're just back down to 2 lives and 0 vials.
That's garbage.
It's stupid. So, I mean, I think it's a huge step back in terms of pretty much everything from the first game to the second. I think the first game has better music, too. I think a lot of it, for those that don't know what I'm talking about, it's a Ghouls and Ghosts spinoff is what the game is. The first game has a lot of Ghouls and Ghosts remixes that are really damn good. And then the NES game, I think, is a lot of original music, and it's not as good. So it's pretty much a downgrade in everything aside from graphics. And it actually looked really damn good for an NES game. And finally, the last game I'm going to talk about here is Shantae on the Game Boy Color, which I tried playing before, but I was sort of overwhelmed by the overworld and dying a lot. I'm giving the game another chance this time. I've actually like made it through 3 dungeons this time. And I'm liking it a lot better, and I think it's because I understand the game's flaws a lot more this time. Probably the biggest flaw in the game is the hit detection. And not even just the hit detection, but the limited area that Shantae can hit. Like, you have
short reach.
Yeah, you have to be really precise with her. She attacks by whipping her hair, and now when I play the game, I just get that stupid I whip my hair back and forth song stuck in my head, and it's driving me crazy. But the enemies are set up in a way that Shantae can't attack well, I think. That's the main problem with the game. And then there's huge traversal areas in between towns, so you get like 3 or 4 just giant screens that you got to make your way through with all these different enemies, and it gets frustrating trying to progress. But if you, I mean, really, I mean, it's not fair to say it's a good game at all, but if you can like manage to figure out a way to make your way through these levels, if you could learn to deal with the collision detection problems and with Shantae's limited reach, the game actually gets better, I think. I think the highlight is actually the dungeons within the game. I think they're all really well designed with like good secrets, good progression. Like pretty much you make your way through a dungeon, you can only go so many places until you find a genie within the dungeon, and then she'll give you an animal transformation. You could transform into a monkey, and a monkey can like cling to walls and climb up things and fit through smaller spaces. There's an elephant that you could use to like break down certain walls, and I just got a spider where you could climb up background elements of the levels, such as like trees or spider webs because she's a spider, or basically like any wall that's closer to the background. There's like parallax scrolling in the game, so like the further background scrolls at a different rate than the closer background, so you could pretty much cling to any closer background. But the dungeons are set up where it just feels really satisfying figuring out your way through them and finding the keys that need to progress. And then there's also like secret areas where you could find like secret squids or something where you need to be able to fast travel between towns. And everything's just hidden really well, and it's all set up really well. And the combat's actually less frustrating within the dungeons because the enemies seem to be larger, and pretty much every enemy you kill in the dungeon stays dead within the dungeon. So as you're like going back forth through the different rooms, like any enemies that you've killed stay dead.
That's good.
And then And then the bosses are they're all right. They're nothing to write home about, but they're not bad. So I think the dungeons are really the highlights. It's just really the overworld traversal that is really, I think, brings the game down because of Shantae's attacks. There's ways to mitigate this, which I'm finding make it a lot easier. You could buy like potions and stuff. So when you're low on health, you could use your potions to bring your health back up. There's like different sub weapons, I guess you could buy. Like there's a chain ball that spins around you and will like hit anything around you that's further away than Shantae could whip herself. So that helps. So there's a lot of little things, but I mean, it's not great within that own respect. But I'm liking the game a lot more than the first time I gave it a go. And graphically, holy shit, this game's crazy for a Game Boy Color game.
Oh, that's the best part. Yeah. I mean, I think the game is not very good. I don't like it, and I don't like it. But graphically, like, technologically, that game is a fucking marvel on the Game Boy Color. It looks like terrific.
Like, even in the first dungeon, there's, like, it's a dark dungeon. I mean, there's two color palettes for every sprite in the game, basically, because when you're on the overworld, it goes from like a day to night cycle, and like the colors change on everything. And then when you're within a dungeon, like the dungeons are dark, so you get the darker color palette of Shantae. But then, like, if you walk into a beam of light, it like brings it back up into the brighter Shantae palette. I'm like, holy crap, that's crazy for a Game Boy Color game to have like shading on a sprite that reacts with the environment. It's it's kind of amazing, actually. So those are my impressions on Shantae. It's not a – there's a good game in there if it was just designed better if the attack mechanics and even a lot of the enemy attacks mechanics are really fucking cheap. Just a lot of randomness. Like there's these shark heads that pop out of a waterfall. You don't know where they're going to pop out. They just pop out and bite you. It's annoying. If they had just fixed a few of these elements, there's a good game in there somewhere.
It would be good if it was good.
It would be. You could find enjoyment in it if you could put up with a lot of the bullshit. Right. If you're not willing to put up with a lot of the bullshit, it's like a sort of like a semi decent NES game in that regard. I mean, like really, by the Game Boy Color, game design had progressed a lot by then. It's sort of if you go into it with a mindset like, oh, this is an old NES game, you could sort of find more enjoyment in it than you could otherwise. But right. Yep.
Have you played the DSi game?
I have not. I'm waiting until I beat the Game Boy Color game, and then I'm going to give the DSi game a whirl.
Gotcha. Because I know Craig is not a big fan of that either, so okay. I did enjoy the DSi game, so I figure I will probably enjoy the
Game Boy Color game. There are better components to that. It's not as it's a good-looking game, but it's not as technically impressive. And your hair is better reach and stuff, but, like, man... Like, I hate... It's a side-scroller, but it operates on different planes. So, like, to navigate, you don't just go left to right. Like, you jump forward or backward. And it just makes the map really, really confusing. Like, I don't think... It's really aggravating. Personally, I feel like the resources are really in short supply in that game. And I think that sometimes it takes a long trek to get from point A to point B. So it's probably a better game, but it's still not one I enjoy all that much.
Right.
Do you know what? Is there like the whole belly dancing switching to different animal mechanics in the DSi game as well?
I'm sorry.
I think so.
Do you turn into like different animals?
Yes.
Like okay.
Am I remembering that right? Holy crap!
I'm pretty sure that's in there. Yeah.
Right, because you have to hold it down and then you release it on a particular.
I don't know how it works in
the first game or the second game.
In the second game, it's like sort of a time button. Like if you want to turn into a monkey, like you press down and then right, and then but you got to do it like in time with a little meter that's moving. My point is that whole animal changing mechanics, specifically the monkey, it reminds me a lot of the independently developed game Noitu Love.
I think it's
developed by Cognac, who's Joaquin Sandberg, I think his name.
Yeah.
But that's like he worked as a sprite artist on Shantae series. I'm pretty sure like in all of them. So I wonder that Noitu Love has the exact same sort of like mechanic where you switch into different animals. I actually wonder which game came first with that concept, because it reminded me a lot of Noitu Love when, as I was playing Shantae. Noitu Love is probably the better game, by the way.
Chris, what have you been playing?
I have been playing a lot of New Super Luigi U, which is, of course, the downloadable content for New Super Mario Bros. U. Although it's also a retail disc, which is how I got it, because I want that green case.
Yeah, I got the green. Mine's still sealed.
I've been playing it. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, it's very clearly downloadable content. I mean, it's built a lot off of New Super Mario Bros. U. You know, the overworld is the same. You know, you don't really have too many new elements. You know, it's all based off of the same stuff you see in New Super Mario Bros. U, except the levels are shorter, which is a big part of it, because you only have 100 seconds, which seems to, in my opinion, really changes it up a little bit, because, you know, we've been playing the same, not the same level design, but I mean the same, based on the same ideas for so long, you know, having these shorter levels and, you know, kind of having to rush through it a little bit is, definitely mixes it up a little bit. I'm enjoying that about it.
Are there, like, time pickups, like, in New Super Mario Bros. 2, like, in the challenge levels? I know you only have a certain amount of time, but there's, like, little clocks and stuff you could pick up to extend your time.
There are not time pickups.
All right.
Well, the only exception to that is in boss stages, where when you go through the door, you'll get an extra 100 seconds, because I think if you didn't, you wouldn't be able to beat the boss in time for some of those.
Mm-hmm.
But with the exception of that, no, you get the 100 seconds, and that is it. Which definitely makes it tough when you're going for, like, the star coins, which I have actually been doing this time, and I didn't do in the first Mario U. And some of these are really damn well hidden.
Dude, I had to ask for Miiverse help, like, in the first game in Mario U, on, like, a ton of them, because they're, like, stupidly hidden. Some of them are stupidly hidden, I think.
Yeah, I feel like they're very well hidden in this game, but I don't feel like they're stupidly hidden. I think I'm in World 5 so far, and I have all of them so far, which I didn't bother to do in the first one, so, or the regular, whatever you want to call the regular game.
Are there still, like, hidden exits?
There are still hidden exits. I haven't found too many, and I imagine they have to be in the same levels, because the overworld is still designed the same way.
Okay.
So I would imagine if, you know, for example, there's one in, you know, 1-3 or whatever, it would still be in 1-3, but I don't remember specifically where all the hidden exits were. So, but I definitely have some as I've been playing through the game, so they are still there somewhere.
All right.
What I really like is, you know, it doesn't really affect the gameplay, but each level has like a little hidden Luigi emblem somewhere, which is just fun to find. You know, sometimes there'll be a little 8-bit Luigi icon on the wall. What's that?
What happened?
Say, Seth.
Seth?
Hello.
What did you say?
I said Chris cut out for me.
Oh, I can hear Chris.
Can you hear me?
All right.
Okay, well, I swear I'm still here. I believe every level has, like, a little Luigi emblem hidden, which are just fun to find. You know, sometimes they're in those areas where you have to walk through where it doesn't look like there's an area where it just looks like a solid wall and there'll be something back there. Sometimes they're much more obvious, like on some of the airships, like instead of having Bowser's head on the front, they'll have Luigi's head. It's just, you know, dumb stuff like that is just kind of amuses me. But, you know, the gameplay is definitely a lot of fun. You know, the shorter levels definitely makes it, you know, feel different, which wasn't necessarily the case for all of the previous New Super Mario Bros. Games. I think everybody seemed to feel that they were getting a little stale. And I think this is a good way to, you know, continue the series without having it feel like it's just the same thing over again, even though it is literally based on, you know, the previous game. And the fact that you're playing as Luigi and you have that floaty jump and he's a little more slippery, it really does feel different. I mean, when I first fired up the game, I was surprised at how different it felt compared to the first Wii U game.
How much harder would you say it is than the first game?
Whoa, Seth, your end sounds terrible.
All right. Well, that's what you guys probably sound like to me right now.
Okay. it definitely starts out harder right away. I mean, I don't know if it's up to the standards of, like, Lost Levels on the NES, which is super balls hard, but it definitely is harder, I think, and it is harder quicker. You know, it doesn't start out with, you know, the easy World 1. It's pretty difficult right off the bat, I would say.
All right, that's awesome. I'm always down for harder platformers.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. You know, I haven't picked up Rayman Legends yet because I know they're pretty different as far as 2D platformers go, but being that I'm playing that right now, I don't feel like I need another one at the moment, and I am really enjoying Luigi, and I certainly have no regrets picking it up, so I definitely recommend it. Even, you know, people say it's downloadable content and it's $30, you know, I guess that's true, but I think it's worth it. You know, you get 80 new levels or whatever, and I'm enjoying it a lot, so I highly recommend it for sure.
Nice.
I don't know what else I've played over the last, like, 2 months. You know, I've played a lot of things, but not a lot recently.
I picked up
SteamWorld Dig, and I picked up Mario and Luigi, but I haven't played much else recently, so I don't want to half-ass it, so I think I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
All right. I played Killer's Dead, didn't like it. Actually, I played a bunch of stuff, I played a bunch of stuff that I really, really enjoyed, but I also played some stuff I really didn't like, and I don't know. I didn't like Killer's Dead. I didn't like Dragon's Crown.
Craig. Can you call me back? I just can't barely hear you guys.
Yeah, we can barely hear you too. All right, yeah, hang up.
Okay.
Played Dragon's Crown, and I didn't care. I like the core game in Dragon's Crown, the core experience of beating people up and leveling up, but there's just a lot of things that kind of get in the way of that. You can't do that with your friends, like, right away. You can't, multiplayer's, like, locked.
That's so stupid.
For hours. Hours. Depending on your play style, it could be upwards of, like, 8 hours or so, I think, if you do, like, all the side quests. So it's a really long time that multiplayer is locked out.
Really stupid, because that seems like one of the most appealing things about the game.
That was, like, the only reason why I bought it, so I could play it with Seth and Hugh, one of our listeners. The game just makes you suffer through, like, this single player for so long, and it constantly nags you on where to go. Like, there's three visual cues on the screen telling you where to go, and then a narrator audibly tells you where to go. In a game, he laughs, but it's true. And
I think they patched some of that out with the latest patch.
Really?
Yeah.
It was just really aggravating. Like, basically, you would go out on a quest, and you come back to there's just one town. It's not a town that you really explore anything. It's purely functional. And you come back to town, and the narrator would say something like, you must go to the castle. And so you hear the narrator say that, and his text then appears at the bottom of the screen. And then the top of the screen has a giant icon that tells you to open the map and select the castle. And then your stupid little fairy pecker friend would sit there and dance on the side of the screen, pointing in the direction of where you're supposed to go. So, like I said, that's three visual cues and one audible cue to tell you where to go. Like, who's playing this? Who do you think is playing this game? Who's going to buy a VanillaWare game published by Atlas, if not hardcore gamers? We know how to play these games. You don't need to bug me. And it's a game where you have to go places. Like, once you come back from that quest and you decide not to go to the castle, because then you go to the temple so you can resurrect the bones that you found out in the field. Well, as soon as you leave the temple and come back out in the town, all that stuff happens again. The narrator repeats himself. The text appears on the screen. The fairy starts dancing. The little icon appears at the top. Then you go to the inn to recruit your team again, because, bizarrely, every time you go on a quest and come back, your team disbands as if you're not going to play or do anything after that point. I don't know why. So then you have to go back to the inn to, like, recruit your team again. You can exit the inn. All that stuff happens again. So it's just, it keeps nagging you on where to go.
And to point out, it doesn't, like, hinder your movement or anything. Craig just hates that some guy is talking and some things pop up on the
There's
screen.
There's a lot of shit on the screen telling you where to, it's just, to me, it screams zero confidence in your design and zero confidence in your player.
All right.
And it just got, after a while, like, no, he's right. It doesn't really, like, inhibit your ability to do anything. It just got super fucking annoying. And just between that, the fact that multiplayer is locked out, and the stupid, oh my god, the Vita version has a touchscreen gimmick where, like, if you're in a dungeon, you don't open a treasure chest by going up to it and pressing a button because that would be too simple. You have to tap it on the touchscreen. Or to, like, unlock a door, you tap it. And then there's, like, hidden treasure, like, in the walls, and then you tap those. I don't know. That seems really, like, DS circa 2007 to me, but at least the Vita has a touchscreen. They didn't remove those things for the PlayStation 3 version. Instead, you use the right analog stick to slowly drag a cursor across the screen, and then
you could change the speed of the cursor.
Oh, I did not know that. The whole thing is stupid. It is literally the stupidest mechanic I have experienced in a game.
They patched a little bit of that too in the latest patch, where you don't have to, for the hidden stuff that's hidden in the walls, you don't have to click it anymore. You just have to scroll over it now.
That shouldn't exist, period. Like, why do I have to use my right analog stick to make a cursor appear, to click on a treasure chest, to make a character that I don't control pop out and unlock it when I can just walk up to it? Like, it's bloated design. Like, it's design that should it's bad. That is bad design. That should not exist. So those things just really frustrated. They felt like hurdles between me and the experience I wanted to have, and that was beating shit up and with my friends. And I feel like if I had more patience, and I feel like I gave the game a fair shot. I played the game a solid 7 hours. I feel like if I had even more patience, I should frame it that way, I would have enjoyed the game more. But I don't feel like I go into a beat-em-up thinking I need patience. I go into a beat-em-up thinking I'm going to mash buttons and kill things. And that just wasn't the case with Dragon's Crown, so I found it very... The art is gorgeous, the music's fantastic, and when you're actually out beating things up with your friends, that is really cool. But there's just, I feel like, a lot of stuff in the way of that, and that was very frustrating.
I mean, the things that you mentioned, aside from the locked multiplayer, which is stupid, I think there's such minor inconveniences that I barely even, like, register them within my mind.
That's fine. I mean, to me, like, some of those things are just, like I said, the analog stick thing, the cursor, that's bad design. Like, there's, to me, there's no argument. Like, if someone says, well, it doesn't bother me, that's fine. My argument's not
No, I agree it's stupid, but it really doesn't bother me in the slightest.
I think it just drags down the pace. I think it just, you gotta, like, stop and then wave your cursor around to find sparkles, or, like, it just should not exist, and I'm just really frustrated that something like that exists. When, like, how come no one said, like, guys, this is really stupid? How did no one look at that and say, guys, this is really dumb. Why are we doing this?
God. I spent all this time unlocking the multiplayer, right? And then I went to play with Hugh. And then he has the Japanese version of the game. And at that time, the Japanese version was patched, but not the US version. And then we still couldn't play because we were on different patches.
Stupid.
That blows.
Yeah, so yep. The game is just really frustrating for me. I could not get out of it what I wanted. And I just felt like there was too many roadblocks.
Actually, I think, like, the next week we played the Dungeons & Dragons Chronicles and Stara instead. And that game is laggy as shit online. Like everything has, like, a huge input delay. I don't know if my internet or his internet, or it's the distance, or it's the fact we're playing Japanese copies in two different, completely different parts of the world, but, like, everything just had a huge ass input delay.
New Zealand. That's just,
yeah,
that's,
I don't like that.
I also played Spelunky for the first time, and I really didn't like that. I thought that would be something that I would like, but Spelunky is, I don't want to call it a platformer, it's 2D, and each level is like this, you know, side-scrolling, like, cavern area. And, I mean, it's not just side-scrolling, it's, like, up and down, it's, like, a whole, like, randomized, like, 2D maze.
Mm-hmm.
And your goal is to, like, get a bunch of treasure, and then leave. Avoid all the enemies, or kill the enemies, or whatever, and then, like, leave. First of all, there's a million fucking things out to kill you.
Yep.
It's really, really difficult. And I feel like with a randomized game with everything out to kill you, like, that alone would be difficult enough. But then having to, like, look for things, like, to get gold or find, like, the golden skull and, like, the girl or whatever. Like, every level has, like, an object and then the girl to, like, bring to the exit.
Or a guy or a dog if you change it in the options.
There you go. It just makes it even more difficult. So it's randomized. You have to avoid a ton of hazards. You have to find stuff. And I think that's pretty difficult as it is. But it gets worse because then if you want to actually explore or learn the game, you can't, because then a giant fucking ghost comes out after, like, 2 minutes and just follows you around until you leave the level. And so, like, to me, like, that screams really pun. It's like kind of like, oh, you wanted to learn this really obtuse game? Tough shit. Here's a ghost. And I was like, nah, I can't do this.
There's no. This is how you learn Spelunky. Everything is going to kill you, and you got to get through the level quick.
Yeah, not for me. I didn't care for
it. All right, now picture that, Craig. Picture that. Now picture playing with another person, and everything that other person does can hit you.
Yeah.
And kill you. And that's how I played the game.
See, I could see that be fun for, like, dicking off. But, like, if you're playing by yourself and you actually want to make, like, progress, I didn't really care for it.
Co-op is... There's one advantage to co-op, and that's if the other player dies and somehow you miraculously stay alive to the next level, you could find a coffin where you could resurrect them.
If the ghost doesn't find you first.
Ah, that ghost takes forever to show up, Craig.
It's only a couple minutes, I think, before the ghost shows up.
I mean, I really don't explore the levels that much. I mean, I get, like, the biggest...
Like, I just feel like I want to be thorough. And I feel like, especially when you first start the game and you're trying to learn, like, you start getting shot by arrows and you're like, why are there arrows? And so, like, as you're trying to, like, learn the game, you're going to take your time. You really should take your time anyway because something's going to fucking jump out and kill you. But, you know, especially when you're learning the game, you're taking your time, the game punishes you for trying to learn it.
Yep. It's a very, very hard game.
I don't think it's just hard. I think it's just punitive, and it's not interesting to me.
Nah. I've seen people play that game who are amazing at the game.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure if you invest a lot of time into it. No, I don't doubt it. I'm just saying that, like, a design that, like, discourages learning. I mean, it discourages learning. Like, if you pause and take your time, something's going to come out and kill you.
You learn by dying.
I guess that's
how you learn.
That just seems really punitive, because then you respawn, and then the whole level's different.
I mean, arrow traps, you gotta, like, throw something past them, and it shoots an arrow, then you're safe. Spiders, just stay the fuck away from spiders. I mean, there's a lot. I think you learn as you die. I think it's all right. I mean, yes. Even the level changes, you gotta just keep your eyes open as you play through the level.
I guess I just don't like punitive design. I don't like design that punishes the player, especially a player that's trying to learn.
Yeah, no, like, it's definitely, yeah.
I don't like that design. So, I mean, I've avoided saying Spelunky's a bad game.
I honestly don't think Spelunky's a bad game. I think it's a very hardcore game made for a certain type of person.
I think it is made for a certain type of person. I don't think it's a bad game, but I really do not. How do I say this? I disagree with punitive design. That's probably I don't like it, and I disagree with that kind of design. But, I mean, I see, like, what's appealing. Like, I'm playing it, and I sit there, and I'm like, I wish this was different so I can enjoy this game more because there are things about it I like. But, yeah, I don't like design. Like, you take a game like Super Meat Boy, right? Because that game's hard. That's a hard game. But it doesn't really punish you. You immediately respawn, like, immediately, like, at the beginning of the level. And the levels are short. So, I mean, like, that's a game that's hard, and you have to overcome challenges, but it's not really punitive. And I can dig something like that.
If you make it to the next chapter, you could start over from that chapter, but you're going to be so underpowered, because you could, like, get a bunch of bombs, you could, like, buy a shotgun, you could get a bunch of stuff. If you, like, start from the very last cavern, you're not going to make it to the end, I think. It's basically a game where you need to start from the beginning, but if you die, then, yeah, you just lose everything.
Yeah. Yeah, not my bag. Definitely not my bag.
I've made it to the last boss twice, and I think it's impossible. I've seen people beat it on YouTube, but I think it's impossible.
But for things that I did enjoy, because I'm being a bit of a downer, which is not typical for me. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why. Maybe my radar's off for things that I typically enjoy. Aki, would you stop tearing up the carpet, bud? You weigh like 800 pounds. You're going to kill it. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. It's
unemployment.
No. On the plus side, I've been playing Tales of Zillia. I talked about that a little bit earlier, and I really enjoy that. I have been playing a little less Animal Crossing lately, but I still like that. I played ActRaiser. I got ActRaiser on the Super Nintendo. You guys play ActRaiser ever?
Is that the one that's God Builder slash platformer?
Yeah.
I have not played it.
Which is
I watched the Game Center CX episode of it.
It is so good. Like, basically, like, you're God. I think the U.S. version probably avoids that. I'm sure the Japanese version's like, God, Jesus, and everyone's farted on it. Like, they don't even care about Christian mythology. But, like, you're God, and it's like, centuries after this battle with, like, Satan. I think his name's, like, Tanzaria or something like that. And, like, you almost died. Like, you as God almost died. So you're like, I'm gonna go nap in my sky palace for a bit. And then, like, millions of years go by. So, like, humanity's, like, fucked 10 ways from Sunday. So what you need to do is send, like, your spirit down in, like, this body of, like, a warrior. And you play these side-scrolling action sections with awesome music and graphics. And then when you wipe out the demons, you then have to rebuild. You have to help humanity rebuild in that area. So then it becomes, like, a sim, almost. Like, you build roads. You direct them to build houses. You use, like, miracles, like... You use, like, thunder to, like, destroy rocks and trees and stuff. You use, like, rain to, dry up the desert. Yeah, right. You do something to the desert. It becomes grass with rain. That's how that works.
So, fertilize the land?
Yeah, whatever. And then once you get the town going, like, the townspeople will discover, like, another demon area. So then it'll be, like, World 1-2 or whatever. So then you go in and have to, like, wipe out the demon, and then you basically wiped out all the demons for that area, and then you move on to the next. And then sometimes people will, like, be like, yo, God, what's up? Like, us back here in Fillmore have a problem. So then you have to, like, go back to the other. So you can constantly build up. You can go back and forth and build up these different regions and stuff. It's a fantastic game. The worst part, it commits one of the worst, I fucking hate this shit. The final level is basically every fucking boss in a row before you fight Satan. And, man, it's like, hard. And they're hard. Like, they're not easy
bosses.
It's the
Capcom school of design right there.
I hate that. So that's, like, the only downfall of this game. Otherwise, it's a terrific game. I love it. I love ActRaiser. It's great music. Oh, man. Fillmore music. Fillmore Stage 1. So good. Everyone should look that up on YouTube. And I also played Saints Row 4, which is one of my favorite games of the year. Saints Row 4 is so phenomenally good, it's ridiculous. And I don't even know where to start. Like, it's an open world game. Like, the Saints Row games are like these open world, like, city games that, like, give you all these tools and opportunities to have fun. You know, you contrast that with, like, Grand Theft Auto, where you can, like, buy, like, bagels, and, like, that's about all you can do in Grand Theft Auto 4. This game, like, you can get a mech and destroy a bunch of shit and win medals for racking up X amount of dollars worth of damage. Or you can commit fraud by leaping into traffic and racking up, like, huge-ass doctor's bills. Like, it's just, the activities are really weird, and there's a bunch of them, and they're fun. And then this game introduces superpowers because it takes place in, like, this Matrix-like simulation. And you can jump really high and run really fast. And it just makes movement, like, really, really fun. And, of course, you're doing this all, like, listening to, like, Paula Abdul, like, Opposites Attract. Like, it's really great. The weapons are great. Like, the dubstep gun. At first, I was really underwhelmed. I was really excited for this dubstep gun. And then I'm like, this is lame. But then once you upgrade it and make, like, your wubs explosive and more powerful, I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, I'm just shooting everything. Everything's blowing up. I'm shooting dubs at people. There's, like, neon lights everywhere. People are dancing. Cars, if you hit a car, it starts bouncing, on, like, as if it's on hydraulic.
Did you get the physical dubstep gun, Craig?
Yes, I did. Yep, I did.
Does it work the same in real life?
No.
Ah.
It plays dubstep. You can point it at people, but that's about it. That set came with some cool shit. It came with, like, a display case that you could put your copy of the game in, and it lights up purple and rotates.
What? Really?
Yeah, I did a video of it. You gotta check out my YouTube channel. Yeah, it comes with a giant display case. You put your game in it, and there's purple lights underneath it, and it just rotates.
That is funny.
That sounds awesome.
But the game is just fantastic. I had so much fun. I've never... Usually, like, open-world games just don't do a whole lot for me. But, like, not only did I have a lot of fun in this game, I did every activity I could possibly do. And finished the game. Like, I did everything in Saints Row 4.
I don't think I've ever beaten an open-world game.
Because I just... Usually I become overwhelmed or disinterested or bored.
I mean, yeah, usually, like... I mean, I think the longest I played was, like, San Andreas, and I played that for, like, 80 hours, and I was like, all right, that's enough of that
still,
game.
Yeah, a lot of games you can still get a lot of that. Yeah, I mean, I finished this game and did every activity. That's how much fun I was having. And to upgrade your powers, you need, like, code clusters, and it's like Crackdown. They're like orbs in Crackdown. So you're just jumping from building to building, just tracking down code clusters, which is fantastic. It's so much fun. I don't know. It's just... Ugh, so good. I mean, I liked Saints Row 2, and I really enjoyed Saints Row the Third, but 4 is just another universe. It's so much fun. Like, I love taking, like, my superpowers. I love freezing people, my superpowers, and then taking out a giant tentacle dildo and shattering them.
I wish I didn't have a job so I could just spend, like, hours playing this game.
You're a dick! And it's funny, the writing is really good. Like, you need to rescue, like, your gang members from the simulation. And the rescue missions, which are story-based, and then there's loyalty missions. Once you rescue them, you have a loyalty mission. And what these do is basically give you background. Like, if you've never played a Saints Row game, this gives you background on the personalities and the relationships and, like, the backstories and stuff. And it does so without seeming too obvious. And they're really well written, and they're really, like, unique, and they're just they're not, like, shoehorned missions where, like, you know, like, every fifth mission in Grand Theft Auto is, like, follow this car, but don't get spotted. Like, they're really unique, and all the writing and the scripting are unique for these particular missions, and it's really cool. It's a lot of fun. I don't know. I think the game is awesome.
Nice.
Cool. And finally, I don't want to talk about it too much simply because I want people to experience it for themselves, but I played Gone Home. Did any of you guys play Gone Home?
No, is that, I remember seeing trailers for that like a while ago, but I guess I didn't realize it was out.
Yeah, I want to play this, but I have not yet.
Here's what you need to do. Nothing. Don't read anything about this. Don't look up any videos.
That's basically what I've been doing. I've heard people talk about it, but I...
Don't jingle.
Yeah, I've been trying to mute it when he does that, but I was talking, so...
Yeah, no, I've noticed that you've been doing it. I appreciate the effort.
Yeah, I want to play this, but I've been avoiding media about it specifically for that reason.
It's better that way, and I absolutely love this game. This is, like, it's an adventure game, like a point-and-click adventure game. Like, it's a first-person, you know, explore this house, pick up objects... kind of game. Normally not my bag, but it's so detailed and so well done in this game, and then, like, the narrative that goes along with it is fucking phenomenal, and there's just no way it would have worked in any other medium. Like, it's not a save the world kind of story, which is awesome. It's more human, more relatable, and it's a story that could be told in other mediums, but the way it was told could only be done in an interactive medium. So I think it was phenomenal. It was great experience. One of my favorite games. Like, Animal Crossing, Gone Home, and Saints Row 4 are, like, three of my favorite games of the year. It's so good. Loved it.
Before you say anything else, I also played Rayman Legends.
I did play a little bit of that, too, and I read on Twitter you were not as into it.
Nah, it's too easy, and then the pace... And then the pacing between, like, the standard levels and the Murphy levels, I think, sort of... don't help the flow of the game.
Okay.
And then I'm just also not really big on the whole level selection process taking place, like, in a studio with...
Selection process is really weird. If you look at that as almost like a GUI or, you know, whatever, like, it's not a very good one.
Yeah, I liked the overworld map type thing that they had going on in
this
Origins better.
Yeah, jumping through paintings, like, I don't know what the hell... I don't like that. It's a very strange interface to select levels.
It's just even the level design, like, so I've only beaten the first world, but even level design I feel isn't as good as Origins so far.
I think what it is that it's so similar to Origins is maybe the novelty's worn off, because I think it's as good as Origins, but I think that's about it. I think it's so similar to Origins that, like, the novelty of, like, holy shit, this is a fantastic side-scrolling platformer that, you know, Nintendo didn't make. is mm-hmm. gone. So now it's like, okay, cool, more Rayman, which is fine by me, but like that sort of like mind-blowing whoa is gone. And it's just sort of, you know, yeah, cool, more of this, fine.
I can see that. I feel like they're a little oversimplified. Maybe it's just the first role. Maybe they ramp up. Maybe they start with a music. I don't know.
Okay.
But, yeah, just I mean, I don't hate it. I'm just really super underwhelmed by it, and that makes me, like, sort of even bummed more, out. Exactly, because I was expecting a lot more from the game, I think.
It's kind of like me and Dragon's Crown, where, like, it just certain things affect your experience so much that even the stuff you enjoy, you're just kind of like...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly who I am.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. That's cool, though. What platform are you playing on?
Wii U.
Okay, yeah, that's what I got it on, too. But I guess that's all we have, then. It's a lot of games. It's a lot of questions. This is nearly 3 hours long. Do you guys have anything you'd like to add?
See you in 2 more months.
Can't wait.
We'll try to aim for next week, if that's okay with you two.
Yeah.
We'll try.
Like I said, I
Chris
have
is like, I'm going
else,
to Crate and Barrel. I can't make it.
No, actually, Jackie is going to Disney World next week, and I am not, so I should probably be free.
Nice. All right, well then, it sounds like we'll probably have another episode next week. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and until next time, you guys take it easy.
Ahoy.